Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah, yeah. A-Dream in the building. Shout out to Bree.
What up, Bree?
I'm finna go in. Look.
Yes, sir.
Look. We came to break down a few topics here. So if you got time, sit and acknowledge it. It's positive, uplifting, and honest here. Keep your ears open and soaking all the words spoken. A couple of jokes to keep it fun, get your laugh on. And maybe a few pointers to get your cash on. See Bree, she all about building. Straight up out the NY, Brooklyn in the building. All the way down to the southern states. West Coast on up to the Great Lakes. So you fragging echoes, so if you ain't fragile. Through the net connection, we streaming you to me. So welcome to the life of Bree. Breaking down in the mouth to the third degree.
This is the Bree life, what you live in life.
Welcome to the Bree life, how we live in life.
From politics to the current events, economics to race, whether you're poor or you're rich.
This is the Bree life, what you live in life.
Welcome to the Bree life, how we live in life.
Coming to you live and streaming to all four points of the globe. It's your girl, Brooklyn born and Crown Heights raised. Living life and breathing life. It's Bree Baby.
Season blessings. You've reached the Bree Life Radio Show, and I'm your host, Bree. And tonight, I'm being joined by a very special guest, my co-host, Mark from Houston, Texas. Mark!
Sabrina!
Peace and blessings, brother!
Peace and blessings.
Well, you know what we're talking about tonight because we talked about it for a long, long time. We've been talking about it from day one.
Mm.
There's a lot of people who have the same type of feelings about what we're going to talk about tonight, and that is the representative. And we're doing that in our... The representative, baby.
A representative. It's a beautiful
Lord
time.
Have mercy. But that's in our first hour. In our second hour, our listeners are going to have a treat, because they're going to be experiencing part two, Hackley versus Wade, on the Willie Lynch Pictures. Part two.
Hackley versus Wade.
Part two.
Oh, goodness.
So, but, you know, let's get down to it, because this hour will pass quickly. We won't know what happened. The representative. Oh, first of all, here's another thing I want to mention. I was just on a show that's a blog talk radio show. The name of the show is Love and Relationships, Nexplicable P. I had a great time on the show, and I promised that I was going to mention their show that comes on air. I believe it comes on 8 o'clock. Eastern Standard Time, 7 o'clock. Is that Central Standard Time? Yes. So.
Yeah, CST.
Yes, yes, yes. So, the representative. Mark, why don't you start giving our listeners a very good vantage point of who the representative is?
Okay, anybody from the 70s remember the song? Who are you? Who, who?
Oh, shit.
Who are you? That's the question. Who are you?
I barely came into the world in the 70s, so
okay.
I don't know.
That's all right. I was there, y'all. For real. Anyway, I was somewhere. But anyway, say this out. The representative. The representative is a person that shows up, obviously. That's why we call him a representative. But the issue is kind of leaves. Or she does. I'm going to say she, because you know what? Women always tell me he does this when he first comes in the door, he does all this, does it, and then later on we find out something else. Now, we've had conversations about the representative before, and people really look at the representative in a whole different ways. You have the basic representative, then you have the extreme, which is kind of like, oh, on a whole nother level, sleeping with the enemy, who the hell is this type of person? But generally speaking, the representative is a person that probably puts his Sunday suit on. You know, everybody knows about Sunday best. You come in with that nice, fresh foot forward, flowers in hand, candy as well. Really affable, nice, caring, loving, energetic, attentive person. I don't know, 90 days. Some even stay around, I heard, for 2-4 years.
Oh, my God. I know
just
him.
Just like the chameleon. Just like the chameleon. You know, he's able to, I mean, he's the one. You right, he's doing the right stuff. Now, you know, when people talk about the 4 years, 3 years, but most people, when they think about a representative, they probably talk about within a year or so, that
mm-hmm.
person is not there anymore doing, they kind of shifted into this whole other individual. Had a conversation with a young lady not that long ago, and she made this statement to me. She found this guy's representative came up much quicker. She had engaged with him. They had met each other. She talked about a lot of things. Now, they had something in common because they went to school together. So what happened is this young man, he seemed to be very engaging, and they had went to school together. So most of their conversations were about school and classmates. So they would go to the movies, go out and have fun. Eventually they became intimate. But they were sharing a lot of stuff concerning school. So it seemed to be really like, hey, this is what's popping. And then shortly thereafter, when it was time to have a seat on the couch and really sit down and engage each other and talk, this dude opens his mouth and has to talk about things other than classmates and other than the alma mater song and the mascot. And that's when everything went downhill. And she was like, who the hell are you?
Oof, my
this is
goodness.
Not the dude. This can't be the person, you know. So, yeah, she was kind of like in that Twilight Zone. She had a Twilight Zone experience. Who are you? And she didn't like him no more. And she was trying to figure out what happened. Why was I, you know, because he was able to represent based upon his ability to communicate to a certain level and a certain level of interest for a short period of time. Now, that's the general representative to me. He can represent or she can represent. I've been there. I had situations where, oh, my God, unbelievable interacting. This person seemed to be really into what was going on, so forth and so on. And then shortly thereafter, there was a fall off. And I'm trying to figure out, because sometimes you feel stupid after having an experiment or experience with the representative because you feel like you know who you're talking to. You enjoy it. It makes sense. She gets me. No, she got you. You just got.
You got got.
You got. She don't get you. She got you. Because the bottom line is representatives know they're representing most of the time. Most of the time. There's another representative we can talk about also, and that other representative is a person that really has good intentions and desires. He wants to be what you want him to be. He wants to be that person. Stamina ain't there, though. He can't keep it up. He can't keep it up. And eventually he said, I can't do this no more. And then when the data he said, I can't do this no more, because he's tired. Because what happens sometimes is you read the ad in a newspaper for the job, and you say, I got skills. I can do that. So then you try to sign up, and you do everything possible to do that. Matter of fact, it looks good for a while.
Good.
And then shortly thereafter, you sign in one day, you punch the clock one day, you say, I can't do this. And hopefully they can just accept me as the way I am right now, because I can't do that stuff no more. I can't do that no more. I can't smile like that no more.
Well, let me jump in right there.
Jump in.
The first thing I want to do is just give our listeners the telephone number or they can call in and talk about their encounter with the representative. And you can do so at 424-220-1862. That number is 424-220-1862. So, the representative. Well, I could talk about a few. Should I talk about a short-term representative?
No. Not sure. You met him too?
Oh my God!
It was a female. She was a female. So you mean they come in male form?
Oh, they come in many male forms. Many.
Hell no.
Five colors. Language speaking. Crazy. Okay, so let's see. Should I talk about a memorable one or not so memorable? I'm sorry?
Let's flip it. Let's flip that head to tail. Put the memorable on head. with a non-memorable on tail. I'm going to flip my coin right now. Wait a minute, I'm going to flip it, so I'm going to tell you. So memorable is heads, non-memorable is tails. Let's do this. And it's spinning, it's spinning, it's spinning, it's spinning, it's stuck. It is heads. What a memorable one.
Memorable. Okay. And you know what? We actually have a soundbite of this, of me talking about this one. So you know what I think I'm going to do? I'm going to go to the soundbite to set up what I was talking about. So, listeners, we're going to take a minute commercial break, and then I'm going to come back on and talk about the representative.
It is important for you to get your healthy dose of the Breathe Life Radio Show, because when you miss the Breathe Life Radio Show, you miss moments like this.
And of course, there's those that they get married for holding matrimony. They got married for holding matrimony.
And this?
The reason why a certain group of women attract themselves to internet dating is so that they can lie, and lie.
We can't forget about this.
I had a stalker. Had to get an order of protection. You got a woman that you've been with for 7 years, so you do it. You're doing something right.
Come on, Bree. Don't stop it.
It's real talk about real life. Inhale and breathe light.
So let's take that deep breath in, because we're about to go in.
It's the Breathe Life Radio Show on Blog Talk Radio. Catch us at blogtalkradio.com/Breathe Life.
And we are back, and I'm about to go in. I love my producer. That commercial.
The stalker.
The stalker. Only how I can say it. The stalker.
Okay. The stalker.
Well, you know, the representative, I met the representative on May 28th, 2005.
We're coming up on anniversary.
I'll tell you. And Stalker was, he was gorgeous. He had golden bronze skin, crystal green eyes, black curly hair. He was 6'7", about 250 pounds. He was just fabulous to look at. And I think of all the dates that I've been on, it was in the top three. Wonderful date. And oh my God, he told me his life story. He told me, you know, about how many siblings he had. He was the only boy of amongst four girls. And, you know, he had his own commercial cleaning business. And he's been in business for upteen years. At that time, he had a 16-year-old daughter that lived with him in New Jersey. He had a 5-bedroom house and all this stuff. And you know what? First of all, when he drove up to meet me in Brooklyn, and he parked this old-ass station wagon, that was red flag number one. I mean, it was like a 1970-something station wagon that looked like it was held together by duct tape.
What's wrong with that?
Well, there's nothing wrong with that, but the picture that he was painting, see, the representative was speaking. But you know what? In actuality, that may be, you know, that was the representative. He was talking about all these things that he had. So when he rolled up in a car that looked like it was held together by duct tape, it didn't look right. red flag number one. But I continued on with the date, and we had spent a wonderful day in Brooklyn Heights, restaurant, promenade, Barnes & Noble. Then we went out to dinner. Really nice. Oh. Really nice. And then...
Could he read?
Yes, he could read.
And then,
you know, we ended the date, went back to our respective cars. He went back to Jersey, and I went back to Long Island.
So how was you feeling?
Wait, hold on. It was a nice date. It was a nice date. Okay?
Yeah.
24 hours later, maybe even a little more. It's 3 o'clock in the morning. And I'm, you know, there's only two things that happen in 3 o'clock in the morning. Okay? One is good, and one ain't so good. So
okay,
when your phone
right
rings
there.
3
stop,
o'clock
Bree,
in
stop.
The morning.
Bree, right? I need you to stop right there. I need you to stop right there, Bree. Stop right
no.
there. Okay, before you tell the folks the next piece, before you tell the folks the next piece, we need you to do one little piece with you, and I want you to tell us, up to that point, what you think about the guy, up to that point?
Oh, what'd my goodness. I was digging him.
You were digging him still?
Yeah, but we had talked. This is one of those internet dates.
Whoa. Stay away from the internet.
Yeah. Stay away,
you know,
child.
You know what Chris said?
They lie.
Lie.
Oh my God.
That's all they do.
So all they do is lie.
The station wagon had thrown nothing off. You let the station wagon pass.
I let that was his work vehicle. That's the vehicle
okay.
he put all
his
you know.
Work vehicle, okay.
Right? Okay, so, you
yeah.
know.
Right? Work vehicle?
Right.
All right, let's 3 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, and let me tell you another thing that happened on the date that was flag number two.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as we got to the restaurant and we were seated, his phone starts going off.
Mm.
And it stopped.
Okay.
And he had it on. First, he had it on ringer. He forgot to put it on vibrate or silent. And then he looked at the phone, and he got very irritated. He put the phone back on the table. And then the phone started vibrating like crazy. I thought it was about to blow up. And
mm-hmm.
looked at the phone. He got irritated. He said, "Oh, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry." And he turns the phone completely off. I
mm-hmm.
said, flag number two. Now,
so
about
24, 36
hours later, I get this call 3 o'clock in the morning. And it's this woman's voice. And it ain't my mother. And, you know.
It ain't my mother.
It ain't my mother. Serving. You know. And then I still got a little worried because I was like, well, you know, I said, hello? And she said, hello? I said, yes. She said, may I speak to Sabrina, please? I said, this is Sabrina. I said, are you calling from a hospital? Was somebody in an accident?
You calling from a hospital? You sick?
Yes.
Somebody
she
dying?
Said, she said, no, why are you asking me that? I said, because I'm trying to figure out why the hell you waking me up 3 o'clock in the morning.
Oh.
And you know my name. Is somebody bleeding? I want to know if there's some blood and some messed up car parts involved in this conversation we're
right
about
now,
to have.
Right now.
And she was like,
so.
No, I need to talk to you. I said, who are you? She said, my name is Barbara. I said, Barbara, my aunt Barbara's dead. What Barbara are you, and who do you belong to? She said,
yeah, the ghost is a ghost.
Yeah, she said, my name is Barbara, and I want to know, do you know a man named Cedric? I said, well, you know the answer to that question. That's why you calling me. What is this
mm-hmm.
about? She said, well, I'm Cedric's fiance.
Of course.
Of course. I said, so now I'm sitting up in a lotus position in the middle of my bed in the dark.
Humming.
Right? I'm like, oh, my God, here enters the drama. So she goes on to tell me that she said she found, I said, well, let me ask you something. Where is Cedric? She said, well, that's...
You actually taking the time to have this conversation like this at night.
Yeah, because, listen, now I'm awake.
My God.
I might as well get all the information. Because, see, I'm not one of those crazy women, you know, that you call them and they'll cuss you out. See, I'm strategic. I'm going to get all the information first. Okay? Then I'm going to do what I got to do. Okay? So she says, well, that's the funny thing. Cedric has been arrested. I said, okay. Now, what does this have to do with me? So she says, well, it's a long story. Do you have a minute? I said, can you give me the abridged version, please? Because I got to go to work. She said, well, yesterday was my birthday. Cedric came to pick me up, me and my daughter up, and took us to breakfast. On the way going home on the Garden State Parkway, we get pulled over. The police officers come to the car and says license and registration. Cedric proceeds to pull out his wallet and tells the officer that he doesn't have his paperwork on him. He left it at home. So the police officer asked him, what is your name, address, social security number, and date of birth. He gave him a fictitious name, date of birth, all that information. They go to the car, so she's like talking to him while they're running the information. What are you doing? Why'd you give him a fake name, blah, 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 blah. And he's telling her, shut up, just stay calm. Comes back to the car. He said, listen, I'm going to ask you one time, what is your name and date of birth? Else I'm locking everybody up in the car, and we're going to put the little girl in Child Protective Services. So she started dropping dime on him. His name is Cedric so-and-so. His date of birth is such and such and such and such. He dropped dime on him. So I said, why are you calling me? I am not interested in what has happened to Cedric. So she said, but you got
to
listen to the rest. What?
I need you to help us all out.
Shut up. So she said, I'm gonna get to it. So now she's saying, well, he was arrested, but he was arrested because he was driving with a suspended license. The license plates that were on the car did not belong to that car. And he owed child support. I said, child support? His daughter lives with him. She said, his daughter lives with him? He hasn't seen his daughter in 10 years. I said, what? So now I'm really sitting up. Now I done turned the light on in the room.
Mm-hmm.
So she said, but I have to tell you something else. I said, well, what else could you possibly tell me about this story? She said, I know a lot about you. I said, how could you know a lot about me? She said, because Cedric wrote notes.
He's been following you.
He took notes. I know your son's name. I know the things you like to do. I know. And she said, there's another concerning thing I want to tell you. I said, what would that be? She said, he took pictures. He has pictures of you in his bedroom. I said, how could he get pictures of me in the bedroom? And see, this is something that internet dating individuals should know. They can right-click on your picture, save it. Anything they want to do. And that's what he did.
Yeah.
He made poster-sized pictures of me and put them up in his bedroom. But guess what? That's the only room he had because he was living in a rooming house with 10 other people. So that five-bedroom house he told me that he had wasn't his. He was living in a room. The cleaning business that he said he had belonged to her. Was the fiancé's business. He worked for her.
Okay, question. Why she called you still? I'm still lost on why she called you.
She called me to tell me all of that and to try to convince me to come to the courthouse with her to confront him. I was like, girl, I don't get down like that.
You got up off the bed, and you went to the courthouse.
No, I did. Now, come on. Martha. I did make a call and made sure that I took care of that order of protection thing.
I know you should know.
Is that picture business?
You know enough of New York's finest. I don't know why you shouldn't have no problem.
Exactly. I know a lot of New York finest, Chicago finest. Everybody's finest. I know. Yes. Shoot. Can you imagine the representative?
Well, you know what, though, Bree? I don't even know, man. That's crazy. What y'all be doing, that's a Lifetime movie type situation. Most of my callers,
You're damn right.
You feel me? I know most of my callers, I hope anyway, that they ain't going through them kind of situations. I think most of them
Listen, I'm going to tell you a shorter and a real short representative.
I told you this story before.
I think I let our listeners know. I was talking to somebody. They lived in West Palm Beach, Florida. They flew all the way to Long Island to meet me.
All the way.
The representative told me that he was 5'10", which you know is short for me, right?
Come on,
you
now.
You know that's short for me. But I said, okay.
Yeah.
Brother seen halfway. You know, I'll give him a shot, right? But guess what the representative didn't let him know? The representative didn't let him know that he was actually 5'3". I can't take it. The representative.
But here's the thing.
Oh, God.
The thing about that situation, again, you figure that out fairly quickly because he's in your face, you see. But we're talking about when you're able to date somebody for a while, and let's say you get past your 90 days, and you're loving those 90 days, and let's say you get to 120 days, hell, let's say you get 365 days.
Okay. All right, I'm going to tell you a good one. The representative, let's just say he has the initials.
No. No, we're not going to do that.
Let's say the representative, you was with the representative for 6 months, right? I was with the representative for 6 months. I woke up one morning and realized I was laying next to a mama's boy.
So what was he acting like before?
He was acting like Puff the Magic Dragon. He was all puffed up. I'm a man, you know. I got my stuff together. You know, I bought my house when I was 20 years old, and I did this and I did that, and I travel all over the world. But when I woke up 6 months later, I was laying next to a mama's boy. Because if I knew he was a mama's boy on the first date or the 10th date, I would have been out. I can't do the mama's boy thing. I ain't doing the mama's
boy thing. I ain't doing
the daddy's boy thing. I'm not doing it.
I wonder what the callers have to say about that.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Let's bring on the tortoise and the turtle.
Oh, hell no. No, not the turtle.
We're going to bring on the tortoise and the turtle. Hello to my two favorite guest panelists, Gail from Minnesota and Minneapolis, yes, and Quentin from Chicago. Peace and blessings.
For the windy city.
What's up, family?
QB, what's cracking, QB?
What's going on?
Listening to my antics about the representative.
That was me playing.
Hey, Q, I know you won't have no representative stories. Do you have any representative stories?
Wait. Quentin, tell them about the girl with the hamburger. Please tell them that story.
Oh, hell no. Not no hamburger. Was it a right tackle hamburger?
No, he got a good one. Tell him, please. They tell him.
Okay. All right. Well, I met this young lady, and this is not the first time that we went out together. We went out a couple of times, and she seemed okay. You know, we went out a few times, but this was the first time I had went to her house. Huh?
She seemed okay.
But this is the first time I had ever went to her house. So when I got to her house, when she opened the door, the first thing I noticed was she had a scarf on her head, and there was like pieces of hair, you know, coming out of the scarf, like it was like undone, you know.
And
I come in, you know, and as I'm walking in, I look at the floor, and there's hair all over the floor.
Yeah, beauty shop.
It's a beauty salon. Right, like that. So I'm like, okay, you know, maybe she cut her hair, you know what I mean? But then I saw the scissors on the floor that she used to obviously cut her hair, which weren't shears from a barbershop. They were regular, you know, paper cutting.
Oh, hell, dog.
Yeah, they weren't. right? So I said, okay, you know what? I still don't know. I mean, that's a little weird. But she said, you know what? Here's my computer. I want to show you some of my videos. Because she had done some videos, one with R. Kelly and I think somebody else.
She
did a few videos.
It wasn't a video like the other R. Kelly video, huh?
No, it was decent. It was other women in there too, so she was in the crowd. So she was okay there. But she told me to have a seat, you know, and look at the videos. She went to the back and did something. So I had to use the restroom. So I asked, I said, can I use the restroom? She said, yeah. When I went in there, I noticed the mirror had sticky notes completely circling the mirror. And I couldn't, of course, you know, I couldn't help but read them. So I'm reading them, and they're like saying, everything is going to be okay. The world is beautiful. You're a great person.
Stuart Smiley.
Huh?
Stuart Smiley. And doggone it, I'm a good person.
Go ahead. Right. See, so That wasn't enough for me, though. I go back out. Stop interrupting him. So I go back out, and I go back to the computer. So she comes up to me and says, you know what, I'm hungry. Would you like something to eat? I'm going to make you the best hamburger you ever had. So I'm like, all right, so she cook. Okay. I said, okay, fine. Right. Go in there. She's cooking. And I'm still looking at the computer. Now I'm past the videos. I'm just on there myself. And she comes back with the hamburger. But it's like, look, you know what a black crayon look like? And I'm not exaggerating. She burnt it to a crisp. Charred.
Charred.
And not only that, it was a ball. It was like a baseball. Yeah,
a
handball. And she balled the bread around it, like, you know, just with the ketchup and mustard, and it was just a big ball of grease, a charred burger, and handed it to me like I was supposed to eat it.
What a burger.
And, you know, now I'm like, okay, I got to get out of here some kind of way. You know, by that time, I'm like, it's a wrap. You know, she ain't right. So something ain't right. So I'm plotting in my head how I'm going to get out of here without causing, you know, a major scene. And so she's like, you're not going to eat your hamburger? I said, nope. And she was like, she looked at me. So you're just not going to eat hamburger? You don't want nothing to wrap it up with and take it with you? I said, nope. And that was it. She snapped.
Hey,
I mean, she
No, Mark, you got to listen to this part. Listen.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, I'm going to hit me with it.
Yeah, she went ballistic, okay? So she's cussing me out at the top of her every word in the book. I mean, screaming. And I'm like, okay, I got to get out of here some kind of way. But she's, you know, in front of me, like in my face. So I'm like, I hope she don't hit me or nothing. As I'm like, okay, I'm going to try to go around her, I start laughing. What I do that for? Why did I start laughing? She said, get out. And as she's telling me to get out, she headed for the scissors. But I guess my laughing set it off. But I was able to get out of the door because she did was like, you know, exploded and told me to get out. But a person can, I guess, portray something else in the beginning. I had no clue. And then her friends told me later on, they was like, you didn't know she was bipolar? I said,
But Q, you mean that, like, she couldn't keep the affirmation? She wasn't, she said, I'm good. She wasn't good no more, huh? She wasn't reciting nothing?
Well, you know what? That may be, but now, the only thing about that I say is that the girl was bipolar.
Okay.
But you know what?
Here's
Q,
my thing. And this is, and QB and I have talked about this a couple of times. And I've gotten on him because I said, now, when was it not clear that there was definite something not right about this scenario? I mean, was it not when you were stepping and sliding on hair?
Hair.
Or was it when you went in the bathroom and saw the post-it notes that said, I'm not going to kill myself. I'm a wonderful person. I smile.
Well,
I have beautiful eyes. Why did it take you so long?
Wait a minute. I got to interrupt real quick. Let me say this. First of all, I want every caller that's listening and listeners that's listening, number one, we are not against people that are bipolar. There are people that are bipolar that take their meds and they're doing a great job. So anybody out there that's bipolar, do not be offended. Don't be offended.
Please don't. No. This is not a show
to
trash mental health.
For real.
No.
For real.
She did not take her meds that day. Okay? Something did not happen on that day.
Right.
How close did you get to being stabbed, Quentin?
How close? Very close.
When she went and got those scissors and she started charging towards you, how close were you to being stabbed?
You know, very close.
You see?
I was still in the house with her.
Listeners, Q is a peace officer. So, remember, he's a peace officer. He was able to survey, and even a peace officer can get taken.
Yeah.
So y'all got to understand that. These representatives, they something else. They lurking. Watch out.
Now.
Okay, Quentin, you got one more representative. I mean, come on. Give us one more.
One more representative?
Come on.
No.
We talked about three. We talked about three.
What was one of the other ones? That one right there.
Do you want to tell the one that laid down in the and Mark would know what street
down.
This is. She laid down in the middle of the street.
Oh no!
She laid down.
Well,
no, you don't want to talk about that one.
I can, yeah, because I mean, I don't know what to say about her condition or whatever. You know, I don't know what was going on with her, but I had known her for some years, and nothing like that had ever occurred where she flipped out on me and wound up in a mental institution.
Q.
Now you know what? You know what I'm thinking, Q. This is the second incident that I'm about to hear. You must have an effect on these women. This is about you.
Hey, I want to know.
No, wait a minute. See, Bree, that's what you said. I know.
Yeah, that's what I said, baby. I want to know.
What kind of effect are you having
on these women?
No, this had to be prior to me. Come on now, this is not. Come on,
you got them coming out of their wings, man.
They coming out of their wings.
No.
They laying in the middle of the street.
Because no. In that case, Bree, you know, no.
You're not taking that one, right?
No, because it would be all of them if that were the case.
Oh shit!
Hey, but you ain't told us. Look, I'm kind of concerned.
What'd you say?
I
ain't said
it. I don't know how many more stories you can take, Q. Q, you ran up top of this.
Come on now, I know y'all got some stories, man. Come on now, everybody got some stories.
Q, I just wouldn't put some more Cabernet Sauvignon in my glass after that one, boy. You just took me somebody laying in the street.
Oh my god!
Yeah. Oh my god! He got hair on the floor. He got women laying in the street, and then you actually got more stories than that. I don't know, man. What are the calls? We got some more callers. Do we got some more callers?
Yeah.
Turtle's on the line. I know
she's
not a representative.
Oh, Turtle don't have no representative. She's not.
Turtle ain't been represented.
No, she don't play. Turtle don't play.
I really don't. Mark
she,
is so right. I only have one.
I know which one you can tell us about. And in a way, I'm going to tell you who you can tell us about. You can tell us about Carl. You know, the one, isn't his name Carl? I don't know. The one that ended up being like the alcoholic one that you had to kind of, you know, put some hurt on.
No, I'm not talking about that one.
She said no.
Yeah.
She's an old dude.
See, he lost everybody. He lost his damn mind. He was a nice guy until the mother problems happened, and then she had to do things on him. I'm gonna tell you what. I'm gonna tell you part of the bit. He busted her windows off and shit. Excuse me. He busted her windows off.
Wow.
Windows out that car.
Yeah. He was a jab or something. He.
That was a 2-year representative at that.
That's the kind I really wanted to talk about. See, because what Quentin just went through, Quentin, that was one of the things that happened. It was crazy and it's over with. And even Bree's situation with that one guy, it happened. It was within a short period of time. But what about the fact that we know people out here that have people that did a good job? Did a good job. But I'm going to talk about the come on, Gail, come on now. Come on, Gail. You can't call into the show about the representative and not talk about a representative.
If I had that experience, I can't. But okay, I'll talk about that one. Unfortunately, that representative did wind up having some. He was an alcoholic, which was not noticeable at the beginning, because you know it turns out to be first you start out going out and partying, and you just have social drinks, and then you realize down the probably what maybe a year down the road, like okay, this person has real problems. But yeah, but then it turned into he loved me, but I didn't love him. So therefore, when I chose to leave because I couldn't deal with the alcoholism, they found where I live, moved to, and I came out one day and there was a big hole in my front window of my windshield. Like, okay. But even if I see him to this day, he'll just grin and he just has this childish look on his face like, I really love you, but I don't feel the same. But the representative that showed up then was an alcoholic, unfortunately, but it wasn't, you know, full bloomed at the time. So that meant something, Mark. Mark, did he hang up?
Where'd he go?
But that was that representative. But I'll talk about a representative that I just met at this job I was doing, minding my own business. I took the job so I wouldn't have to do another office drama, none of that. Just want to go in, do my work, leave. I didn't have to speak to anybody if I wanted to because I worked by myself. So the day that I decided I wasn't going to go back anymore, I said, okay, I'm going to finish up this week. I'm going to take off one day, then I'm going to finish up the 2 days. So they caught me the day that I was going to take off, the day before. So they're sitting in the lobby, and all of a sudden, I've seen this person as I'm walking through the factory, but I just, you know, I don't have to speak, so I don't speak because I wanted it that way. And so then they're sitting there, and they're chopping up. Then they start asking me who I was, and, you know, da-da-da. So we pass through words and numbers. So, of course, all of a sudden, it's a representative called me the next day and said he was off and could we go to drink. So I said, okay, fine. I don't have a problem. I like having friends. So as soon as I get there, he made sure he sets it up. Well, my job called me. I got to go in. Like, okay, that doesn't even sound right. We're barely even sitting here 40. You know, I just pulled up and you telling me you got to go to work. So he hurries up and down his beer. I sip two sips, and then we're done. So this representative still continues to represent himself as a single man, and he also even said, paraphrased himself and said he doesn't lie. I don't lie. I don't need to lie. Well, okay, where's that coming from? But already I see it through you, right? So evidently, well, he set it up that he has an invalid friend at home who he helps take care of, and he does a lot of, you know, bringing them food and stuff, and I'm like, This picture is just not added up. So, anyways, this representative is misrepresenting himself, and I've already seen the light through it, and I'm just laughing each day I get a text. I get a text, like, every 2-3 hours. Like, but you're single, and you're looking for someone, so it's just not added up. But I'm just laughing because I don't call them and I don't text them. I just see where they're going with it. But it's funny. It's just funny. You're 46 years old.
Yeah.
You're still misrepresenting yourself.
Gail knocks people out, y'all. Don't worry about that. She ain't gonna possibly have no representatives too much because she knocked them out the gate.
Yeah,
she got a detector. She not one of them like in a metal detector. She be picking up on them. Bam. She knocked them out.
I see you.
Well, we have another caller, and. It's my very good friend, Super Duper, from Atlanta.
Man, Mark.
Mr.
Super
Olmstead.
Duper.
What's
what
going
up, baby?
On? What's up, man?
Man, Mark, we heard you in a minute, bro. Where you been?
But I heard you. I hear y'all, man. I'm always listening, man. Always listening.
Okay, that's beautiful, beautiful.
So, Super Duper, you got
on?
A representative story for us?
Oh, I haven't been catching. What's the deal with the representative?
What's the deal
with
the
representative? Okay, representative Mark is good. He's a representative. You know you done went out with somebody that everything looked cool. They was cool. Might have worked 2 days, 3 days, 2 weeks, 2 months. And then later on, for some odd reason, this person changed, flipped up the script on you. You was like, wait a minute, this ain't the person I met. I know you got a story like that.
Actually, nah. I'll just call it because you come on in a long time. She always keep telling me to call. Do I got a representative? I don't know. Y'all go ahead and talk, and then I'll come back on that, you know, because I got to think about that, you know.
She got a date.
You know. I got a long train, man. I mean, sure, I'll be 40 years old, man. Come on, let me think about it.
Out of here.
How you doing, Turtle? Long time. How you doing?
Where'd Turtle go?
Turtle's there?
I'm fine. How are you?
Good.
Uh-oh.
What's up, Chicago? How you doing, Chicago?
Nope. He's off the line. He'll be back because
okay.
We'll be joined.
Office is up because I'm from Chicago anyway. So, I mean, everybody's called. She called me Mark from Houston because that's where I live. So, I guess it ain't where you're from is where you at. But I'm really from the south side of Chicago. For all my, 312-773, all the listeners up in that area, yeah, Chicago represent. Now, south. Anyway. But, come on.
I don't know about
731-708,
all that. But I know that there's an 832 number on the line. So, we're going to pick them up. 832-443.
That's Houston.
Peace and blessings.
Hey there, it's Gigi from Houston.
Gigi, baby.
Gigi to the G.
I just decided to call in the last few minutes of this hour because I probably have the best representative story.
Well, we would love to have one. Have you met one?
I married my representative. I married him.
Oh, okay.
The other way.
Yes. I married and divorced. Let me just make sure I throw that in for good measure. But I married and divorced my representative.
Mm-hmm.
And we dated for years.
Okay.
We actually started out as really good friends. He wasn't somebody that I would normally be attracted to or anything. And he had that notorious B.I.G. charm. And he was like that, 6'7", damn near, excuse my French, 300 pounds, just a really big dude. Just was not
Listen,
somebody
PG,
I would normally.
Let me tell you, you're not out there alone, sister. I let one get me, too. I'll tell you my representative, Biggie, 300 pound, I wouldn't have normally dated him story. So you continue. What say you, baby?
So we started out just as friends. It was not somebody I was attracted to. And so we were friends for like almost a year before we became romantically involved. So we became romantically involved, and still he's just the ultimate charmer, and he's the event hoster and, the big guy on campus, so to speak, because he was drafted by San Antonio, the Spurs, and he just was well-known. So we had all that going for a few years. We got married. When we got married, we dated for 8 years. Well, I knew him for 8 years. We dated for 6 years before we got married. When we got married, the gambler man showed up. The gambler man that quit his job so that he could have more time to go to Louisiana to the casino showed up. The gambler man that drained our bank account and went to the casino so that he could gamble.
The same gambler man
pawned my wedding ring. I mean, he was a serious gambler, and for all those years, I never knew it.
Gigi, let me stop you real quick because I want everybody to understand something about Houston, Texas. If you live in Houston, Texas, there's no casinos in Houston. You got to drive 2.5 hours to get to a casino.
To Louisiana, right.
Mm.
To Louisiana, 2.5 hours to get to a casino.
Right.
Go ahead.
To the nearest casino. So, but again, for all those years that we were together, I never, ever knew he kept it a very well-hidden secret that he had this immense gambling problem.
So when he came up missing, I mean, because Louisiana, that's a nice drive. So how did he justify coming up missing?
He's a basketball coach. That's how.
What?
So how did that work? How did that work?
He said he was out scouting people?
He was out scouting and recruiting because he did AAU basketball. As a matter of fact, he still does it. But he did AAU basketball. So it's not a traditional high school basketball or anything like that. They go out and they recruit their players just like NBA teams do.
Right.
Of course. So he's recruiting.
So he's recruiting. Or he had a game.
Okay, let me ask you. How long?
Because he was, because he was coaching in town, I went to his in-town games, but when he said he was going out of town, I didn't go. I had to work.
Okay. So how long did it go on? How long did it take for you to pack his stuff?
We stayed married for a year and a half.
Okay.
We were together for 8 prior to getting married. We stayed married for a year and a half, and that's after 2 hospitalizations for me because of the stress.
Mm.
That's a representative story for yourself.
Okay.
For your ass. Real estate ass. Ass.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
For your
I got one on you. I think I got one on you. How long was you in your representative story?
A total of
When the representative sat down and you was dealing with the actual individual, from that point to the time you packed his stuff and kicked him out, how long of a period of time was that?
Less than 6 months.
Okay.
Ooh,
well,
you were good.
Understand this. And this is my first. This is my first experience with panic attacks. And I ended up in the emergency room twice with panic attacks. And at that time, they're thinking it's a heart attack. I'm in the cardiac unit for like 3 days. They're trying to figure out what's going on with me. They didn't realize, and I didn't realize it was my husband that did that to me.
Well, let me tell you this: a man that ain't taking my breath away, doing the right thing, got to go. He gonna let nobody put me in the hospital.
Oh, he's gone.
If he ain't taking my breath away, doing other stuff, he got to go. I can't. Well, I commend you for standing up for your peace of mind.
Mm-hmm.
And doing what you
understand that the last time I came out of the hospital. Because, you know, when you're in the hospital, you have to send all your jewelry and stuff home. You can't have that with you in the room. So I sent my wedding ring home and all my jewelry home with my husband. So when I got back from the hospital, that he had his brother come and take me home from the hospital because he had gone to Louisiana to the casino. When I got home, my wedding ring was missing.
Ooh.
He pawned my wedding ring to go to the casino.
Ooh.
That's when I kicked his black ass out. And that was the end of that.
Okay.
He pawned a wedding ring. He pawned, when you were in the hospital.
He pawned my wedding ring that I had sent home with him because you don't keep the jewelry in there. I was in a semi-private room, so you just don't keep your stuff around like that. He pawned my wedding ring.
Okay.
Well,
DG, I want to thank you for sharing that
representative story.
I will tell mine because we have about 3 minutes left before we go to the second half of our show. So I'm going to leave you all with my most devastating representative story, and I'm going to tell it real quick. In short, I did a do-over, which we've had that show already, a do-over with a person that I hadn't seen in 18 years. And when I met up with the person for the second time, he told me he was divorced. He had 2 children, and he was divorced and he had 2 children. After getting engaged to marry him and move in to be with him, I discovered 3.5 to 4 years later that the representative was told what he told me was a lie. He was actually still married. He had 3 children, all 3 different baby mamas. The 3rd child he had with a woman that he had an extramarital affair with, that he moved to the town where we lived. Shortly thereafter, she started working on my job. And here ended the lesson. That's the representative for your ass. So the moral to that is, the moral to that story is, make sure you know who you're getting involved with. Because the next person I get involved with, I'm going a periscope in his behind. So I know exactly what I'm getting. That'd be a lesson for you.
Yes, sir. The representative.
The representative.
Wow. So, Bree, where are we at in the show? What's going on? I mean, are we
moving
on
to the top of the hour? And in a few moments, we're going to be joined by Dr. Jeremiah Hackley, where we'll be discussing part two. Who is it? Hackley versus Wade, the Willie Lynch letter.
Well, I'm gone.
I'll
go to y'all battle.
It was good to have you, though. I've really been a while. We ain't heard from you. So,
we love you.
But I definitely listen, though, that's for sure.
Yes, he does. We love you, Super.
We appreciate you, Mark.
No doubt. What's tomorrow? Oh, it's just regular freestyle. All right, that'll work.
That's the one you need to come on. You need to join us.
Tomorrow night, we need to get the freestyle.
I'll call it.
From Brother Mark.
Yeah, but I'm going to tune in. I'm going to listen to this French letter thing, so, you know.
Thank you, y'all.
Go ahead and be safe, and we'll chat tomorrow.
Okay. Well, we have another caller. Our caller is calling in from Gigi. You still with us, right? Is she still with us? Okay. Our caller is calling in from 301-503. That's 301-503.
Hackley on the line.
Peace and blessings, Dr. Hackley.
Peace and
listeners, is Dr. Jeremiah Hackley on the line with us?
Yes, I am here, and I'm excited about tonight's conversation.
Well, wonderful. We welcome you, and we're glad that you're back. And what we're going to do now, we're going to take a commercial break, let everyone catch a breath. Go and get some water, do what you got to do, and don't tune out. Stay tuned in, because it is the Brief Life Radio Show.
This one's for you, Alex Stoney and Gigi, the representative. You know, the person who is, but they ain't. Now, remember, the representative can be good. They might be able to represent for 4 years, or might get her done in 2 weeks. They have a sparkling smile. Best foot forward, great humor. The one you want to take home to mama. But if you got a minute, stick around. You'll get a chance to see the frog, ribbit, ribbit, swallow your princess. You were just in the fitting room, getting ready for that wedding. Okay, now, I'm going to need you to hold your horses. Slow down. You got to know that all that glitters ain't gold. It ain't even gold-plated. So this is what I'm going to need you to do. Start seeing who's in front of you before they get under you. This has been Mark Said It in under a minute.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, you have tuned into the Brie Life Radio Show Freestyle Thursday, where we inhale and breathe life. We have a treat, folks, and sincerely, people, I think you're going to love this one. We are going to be discussing Affairs of the Heart in Living Color. We are discussing social programming and the Willie Lynch tape for the first hour. And in this corner, weighing in with his book, The Letter, Hackley's exhaustive commentary on the Willie Lynch letter, coming from the shores of the Potomac, the Chocolate City, and a stone throw away from the Oval Office. It's Dr. Jeremiah Hackley. And in this corner, weighing in with this book, Mark Said It, The Journey of a Man Through a Dark Rope, and Mark Said It in under a minute. now residing in the Bayou City of Houston. We have a problem. Mark from Houston,
Texas. This is the moment we've all been waiting for.
But no, it's not Thursday, people. It is Wednesday. And we have been joined by Dr. Jeremiah Hackley and Mark Wade. And they are going to be discussing part two, the Willie Lynch letter. Now, I want you to both remember the rules of engagement. This is all in love. Touch gloves. And come out thinking.
Oh, hilarious. Yes, sir. I am. I'm inclined to say hello, but since we're in a fight tonight, I think I might want to start fighting. Or if I don't start fighting, I might get knocked out like it was. I think it was Mayweather who knocked out my brother. I forget the other boy's name. That's how quick he went. But it's interesting tonight that we're on this Willie Lynch letter. I want to start by saying last week I went over a lot of history myself, and I really thought that I conveyed a clear message of the legitimacy of the letter last week. But this week it seems that I have to go back over. Not necessarily the same information, but we need to dig into the content of the letter. So I want to throw the first punch with this part of the letter. I call it chapter 3, verse 1. It says this. It was in the interest and business of slaveholders to study human nature and the slave nature in particular with a view to particular results. Verse 2 says, I and many of them attain astonishing proficiency in this direction. Verse 3 says, they had not to deal with earth, wood, and stone, but with men, and by every regard they had for their own safety and prosperity the need to know the material on which they were to work. Conscious of the injustice and wrong they were every hour perpetuating, and knowing what they themselves would do, were they victims of such wrong, they were constantly looking for the first signs of the dreaded retribution. They watched.
I have to interrupt for a moment because I'm getting callers telling me that there's an echo. If whoever has their computer on, could they mute it if they're calling from the phone?
Okay, it might have been my phone, but I changed the setting.
Okay.
All right. Okay.
All right.
It says they were constantly looking for the first signs of the dreaded retribution. They watched therefore with skilled and practiced eyes, and learned to read with great accuracy the state of mind and heart of the slave through his sable face. And I want to stop there. I want to say this. Slavery is, was, and will always be a state of mind that produces a state of being, and it always operates to the interest and the business of slaveholders. And it is a work, a constant work on human nature. My brother Wade has this thought in his mind that we are not somehow affected by the issues of our past. Unfortunately, I wake up every morning, and as well as 100 million other people wake up every morning and deal with
the challenges that have been plaguing us for centuries now. And so I want to start with, it is in the interest and business of the slaveholder that we're dealing with the challenge. And it is a state of mind that produces a state of being. What say you, Brother Wade?
Before Brother Wade speaks, I'm getting that there is still an echo on your line, Dr. Hackley. Are you calling from a landline or the computer?
No. I'm calling from. It can't be my line. Then it must be someone else's line. Yeah, because the same setting I use every week is on.
Really?
He's echoing.
Okay.
Yeah.
He's echoing off. Yeah,
they're saying that you're echoing.
I mean, I can hear it on my end. He is echoing. I don't know why. Am I echoing?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, am I echoing now? Am I echoing now?
Yeah, you still are. You still are echoing. Well,
wow.
There's three people behind me. Well, Dr. Hackley, fixes. You know what? I'm echoing too. Everybody's echoing.
Everyone is echoing?
I'm echoing. I can hear me echo, and I heard him echoing.
I don't hear you. I don't hear you guys echoing. Am I echoing?
No, you're not echoing.
Well, no, you're not at all. You're not at all.
Okay.
And as Dr. Hackley said, I'm using the same line that I always use, and so I don't know what's going on. So weird connection issue. Anyway,
okay. Hopefully,
I don't know. I don't know. But let me say this. I want to address what Dr. Hackley said. Yes. First of all,
let's move on.
I'm so glad that he mentioned. First of all, I heard a scriptural reference, which I thought was cool because that basically predated the transatlantic slave trade, number one. So the whole concept of slavery is something that is very perilous, and impairing is definitely not missed by me. However, when we deal with the Willie Lynch papers, and what I will say is kind of funny because there's no history of it, number one, prior to, like I said, 1990-93. And it's interesting when you read the word Willie Lynch, you can break it down and say, Will he Lynch? Which is kind of interesting because that's a nice little play on words and kind of coincidental, kind of like an anagram almost. But here's the thing. My issue with the Willie Lynch situation is that it's a very inflammatory letter. No one out here would ever suggest that there's not a systematic undertaking by slaves holders to suppress and control their slaves. Obviously, you have to have some kind of system if you're going to have the ability to keep a people in a certain space, kind of like the invisible fence.
What's the next letter?
The invisible fence scenario, number one. The Willie Lynch letter is quite interesting because it's a letter that I see as being very inflammatory, and it's very interesting because the language is very similar to language that was found in, actually, I would say the Nation of Islam prior, and it was kind of interesting because we growing up in Chicago, and really not that far from the nation's headquarters. When I listen to the Willie Lynch letter, it sounds a lot like the leader of NOI or someone that came up under his tutelage. Now, here's the thing. To talk to a person about bondage. Matter of fact, you could just use, if you want to use the Christian concepts or the Jewish issues from the Hebrews being in prison, we can talk about imprisonment and bondage. But I don't know that I need to have an inflammatory letter that, first of all, cannot be substantiated prior to its appearance in the 90s. And it just happens that Willie Lynch, which sounds like Will He Lynch. So it's very interesting because we've been taught a lot about slavery over the years, and we have had a lot of eyewitness accounts, even by people who we love, like Frederick Douglass, that talks about it in detail. So my thing is, what's the purpose of bringing up the what I call a lot of hyperbole, a lot of inflammatory statements like using asses and horses and so forth and so on. Because my thing is this, if you want to sell something, there's always a way to sell anything. And a good salesman can find a way to sell anything. And if you want to try to find points in a Willie Lynch letter to substantiate an individual's inability to move forward, to advance, fantastic. But at a certain point, there's going to have to be a departure anyway, and I'm going to have to deal with what are you willing to do to change your situation. Because as far as black people are concerned, remember this. White people or Europeans did not come and invade Africa to take over us and then bring us over here. We were already enslaving each other. And number one, number two, there is history to suggest that a black man actually, by the name of Hannibal of Carthage, actually crossed over into white Europe and took over and occupied Spain for 600 years. And it was no joke what he did. So the concept of slavery, and unfortunately, we ended up under this old system. I think because I've taught a lot of young people and worked with a lot of young black men about moving beyond their scenario. And also, my base of understanding is Christianity as well. Being a former youth pastor, choir director, and church musician, I understand well about the need to talk about emancipation and liberation from a spiritual concept. But I don't know how much time I need to spend with inflammatory letters about putting a white skin in one against a black one. Because first of all, if I'm pitting slaves against each other, then I'm not going to get a high level of productivity on my plantation. I need everybody to go along with a hierarchy. And it's got to be somewhat smooth. But I can't be pitting people against each other.
Brother Wade, there is a hierarchy. There is a hierarchy. It says, but this is the hierarchy. He says, have the slaves trust and depend on only us. He says, always have white overseers and servants who enforce this psychology. So there is a hierarchy.
But here's the problem with that. I agree with that. I don't need to really listen. Remember this. We have enough history prior to this letter. My thing is this. If we want to talk about slavery, and we want to talk about it's the ills that it's had on a population, especially the minority population of blacks. We can do that. But the thing is this: we've been teaching about slavery for a long time prior to ever coming upon this paper. And my attack or my position is not about slavery. It's not about the ills of slavery. It's not about bondage. It's about this Willie Lynch letter, because I don't need that letter.
Okay, let me help you then. If this Willie Lynch letter, is not a literal document filed in the archives over here, then the question would be, are the points in this letter indicative of the realities that we're facing right now?
Okay, and so here's the thing.
That's the question.
The realities that we're facing, meaning inability to progress on a consistent basis, fine. But what you want to do, what you're doing is using anecdotal evidence. That's not scientific. It's anecdotal.
You have made assumptions because you don't have the book, and somebody who makes assumptions about something that they haven't read you're talking to someone who has taken the letter. Here we go.
Uh-huh.
And broken it down into 247 verses and 9 chapters. The reasoning behind the letter, me doing it that way, was not to prove the validity of the letter, but it was to give a response to the, if in fact it is metaphors, to give a response to the composite sketch of the image that the letter gives to this generation of African Americans, because I am facing on a daily basis the reality of the letter, and so you can fight the authenticity of the writer. You can say it came from the Nation. Some people say it came from FBI.
Wow.
Some people say it came from people who were in the Black Panther Party. There are so many conspiracy thoughts about where the letter came from, other than Willie Lynch. But what I do know,
but
what
the
I
reason,
do know,
the reason why,
but,
the reason
but
why
we cannot,
you have those
I don't
want to
fight over history because
doctor,
we had that fight last week.
But doctor,
we had
doctor,
that fight last week.
But doctor, if we want, but see, all I'm saying is this: I don't need the letter to substantiate points of bondage and the need to preach a liberation type of theology, I mean, or theology or a position of we need to step beyond the circumstances. My thing is this.
Okay, well, let me ask you this question. Let me ask you this. If you don't need this letter, if you don't need this letter, if you don't need this letter, then what, then what do you use, what do you use as your basis of dealing with the concept of liberation? And when I say basis, I mean if we're being liberated from something, what are we being liberated from, brother?
Okay, I'm going to help you out. Because first of all, one thing about it is this. I do deal with young men all the time. That's what I've been doing for the last 15 years, working with young men between ages of 13 to 21, and mostly I'm minority. And what I want them to understand is this. And I tell them this. I say, you know what? If you see any human that has the ability to achieve anything, you are made and are composed of those same things from an atomic, from a biological, from a chemical level, first of all. Now, what you need to do is understand you have everything you need to do whatever you desire. So we have to sit down and we have to get you to look at what you want to manifest. What do you want to bring into existence? And I can promise you, beyond a shadow of a doubt, if you see any man or woman from an Oprah Winfrey to a Denzel Washington to the local successful businessman on a corner or somewhere over in Northwest Washington, D.C., I can promise you he understood that he had to see beyond his condition. And I don't need to take you on a history lesson
to
slavery to do that. Go ahead.
Now, since we're two brothers, who believe in the Bible or believe in the words that were written in the scripture, this is very key. You said something. You said you have the power to manifest. But this is the key. The scripture says, this is the scripture. In 1 John 8, and it is the because it says, for this purpose, and you're probably familiar with the scripture, for this purpose was the Son of God manifest, that he might destroy the works of the devil, who is the enemy, or the oppressor.
Yes,
Now this is the key. If there is a need for liberation, there has to be a reality of enslavement that's addressed. If you do not address the reality of enslavement in whatever form, and this is what I mean. We've had do we go to movies? Yes. Do we listen to music? Yes. Do we read books? Yes. Do we read fiction novels? Absolutely. Do we read nonfiction books? Absolutely. What is so inflammatory about this particular letter that it does not absolutely give visibility to something that's already there? It seems to me that every time somebody wants to touch this subject about injustice against African Americans, people have an issue because it's a nasty, ugly part of our past, and we want to say no. Everybody's my brother. Everybody's had the same experience that we've had. We come from the Jews. But brother, this is it. For 400 years, this is it, brother. For 400 years, but this is it. For 400 years, brother, we have had a distinct experience in this land called America, and nobody can compare their experience in this land like we can to what we have done in this country.
Nobody else can stand on this ground and say that they've had the experience in this country that we've had. Excuse my language. This ain't about a pissing contest. This ain't about comparative. This is not about who had the worst situation over who. This is about what do I need to do to move forward.
Oh, no, it's not a pissing contest. It's not a pissing contest because we're the only ones getting pissed on.
But my point is this, that you need to figure out how to get out of the aim of the pitch. You got to move out the way. You got to figure out how to move beyond that. And I don't need to go to a letter about the slavery to do it. That's all I'm saying. I don't need that. And I'm not talking about your book.
This is how you get out of the game with the pitch.
First of all, you identify who's pissing on you. That's the first thing you do.
Secondly,
I'm calling foul because we ain't in the choir now. So we can sing together, but we can't talk at the same time. Okay? Not in the choir. That's all I'm gonna say.
Come on, sister now.
Let me finish. If somebody is pissing on you, you identify who's pissing on you. One, two, you identify your position. You identify your position of why you're being, how you got there, how you're not going to get there anymore, and who is this person with this intent, and who is this person with this intent to emasculate me, to humiliate me? What is this intent? Where does it come from? How do I deal with it? You have to deal with all those things. If you are going, if you are going to deal with it in an educated manner.
No, check this out. And I am an educated man, you know, and I know that you are. Number one, because I know you're educated, you know that I don't have to do what you just said to be able to deal with the perils of piss or rain or anything else. I don't have to be a meteorologist to understand that I need to move out the way. I don't need to know where the rain is coming from. Let me finish. I do not need to know where the rain has come from to make sure that I take cover and I protect myself. I do not need to know where it's coming from. I just need to move. I need to know where to go to get away from it and get out from under and find my haven of rest and my shelter. I do not need to know that. Now, it's fantastic.
He will be following you then, brother. He will be following you.
Let me show you something. While you're not acknowledging the reality of who he is, he will be finding a way to get to you. But you know what? The reality is this. For me, for my reality is this. Number one, I do not need to. I don't. And people that have been successful, they need to have more focus on what it is. Again, back to what you were saying. They need to focus on what they want to see manifested. Back to the Bible. One thing we know, and it says it in Romans, and I believe it says it also in Romans. I don't know. I think it's the ninth chapter of Romans. It talks about the fact that Satan was created. I mean, Pharaoh was created for the day of destruction. So that means there was a plan for all of what has happened so that you can see the glory of God and see his power and move within that. So therefore, the whole reality, the whole concept of overcoming, check it out, the whole concept of overcoming my things. It's almost even like when it talks about when we get off into the whole concept of the Lord's Prayer and forgiving our trespasses, so to speak. I don't need to, you know what, I don't really need to deal with them other than understand that who I came from. Where was my birthright? Who has my birthright? And what is owed to me? What do I need to do to walk in my fullness? You feel me? I don't have to do this.
This is what I'm going to say to that. You've got to read the whole script. Because the scripture says this: our God is a consuming fire. What is he consuming?
Yes.
He's consuming anything that is not his
iniquity.
Let me finish because we've got to deal with this. If you're going to deal with the scripture, you're going to also deal with the fact that where there was sin or where there was injustice or where there was oppression, the scripture says that the Lord was going to defend the oppressed and he was going to deal with the oppressor. And so you cannot say that I just need to discover who I am, because this in discovering who I am, I'm going to be all right and it's going to solve my issues. No, if you discover who you are, you're going to have to know how to discover who you are and who you are fighting.
I'm not saying that we're in a race war.
I'm saying that we are in a match against the spirit of injustice in this particular country that reigns through a system that has been authenticated through the oppression that has come down.
And there is no disagreement.
Some people are suffering from it, and they don't even know. And they don't even know that they're suffering from it. And I'm not talking about African Americans. I'm talking about our European brothers and sisters. They're not even aware that they're suffering from the psychology that's been passed down from generation to generation. And so when you're dealing with people like that,
But, brother, that's all I got to say. You're talking about generational curses. And if that's the case, we can go further back.
You're talking about generational curses. That's a nice term, but I'm talking about more than generational curses. I'm talking about way more than generational curses.
This is what I'm talking about.
I'm talking about generational judgments.
Wait a minute. So the bottom line is you can't divorce either one. So when you say it's we're dealing with both. They're kith and cousins. They're results. With a curse, there's a judgment. Actually, the curse comes with a proclamation of a judgment. You can't divorce them. And I know you know that.
Now watch this. This is it. The ultimate. This is what Joel Baker says. Joel A. Baker, he's an author of Paradigms, the Business of Discovering the Future. It's in my book. He says the ultimate function of prophecy is not to tell the future, but to make it. Now, I'm going to say this. I'm going to say this real clear here. There have been some things that have been said to us down throughout the generations, and there have been some things that have been inundated or indoctrinated into our thinking that we are now experiencing the manifestation of. And yes, we do have to have a different manifestation, but the manifestation of today has to be strong enough to consume the manifestation that we have been dealing with over the course of these generations. Now, it's not something as simple. It's not something as simple to say spiritual.
Okay.
It's not something as simple to say it's just a spiritual matter, because this particular manifestation that we're dealing with as African Americans has to do with the color of our skin and the stigma that's attached to it.
Okay, let me say that. First of all, number one, that is a cool smoke and mirrors game if you want to believe that. But if you're coming from a spiritual base, then you need to, let me just say this. If you're coming from a spiritual base, you need to you understand this better than anybody, Doc, and you know this. Whatever you see in the natural comes from the spirit, number one. It's a manifestation of something that's unseen. Let me finish. It's a manifestation of something unseen. So, therefore, this is really never about color, because color is just the end result of something that was going on. So, therefore, here's the thing. You can go ahead and talk all day about color. We know about color. Number one, the whole lot of people that overcame adversity from a black standpoint, who did not have opportunity to read the Willie Lynch letter, understand that you have to find a place within understanding from a spiritual construct or a spiritual place where your power is. It's like when it says greater is he. Let me finish, Doc. Let me finish. When it says greater is he who is in me, then he was in a world, and the world will be the place where the color exists. You got to find a place to come from a strong spiritual construct and say, look, I can walk in the light, I can be the light, and I can be that city that's set on a hill. And I don't need to read the Willie Lynch papers to do it. And I'm just saying.
Let me say this. I'm not in the fight with the scripture. The scripture is in the fight with injustice. The scripture is in the fight with oppression. The scripture is in the fight with the oppressor. The scripture is. I'm not talking about me being in the fight with
what the scripture means. Okay.
Now, this is a scripture that's very dear to me.
I need to help me out, Doc.
You know what? We are going to take a commercial break.
Yeah.
We need to inhale and breathe light. Okay?
Yeah.
So on that, we're going to take a commercial break, and we will be back in a few minutes. Okay?
Yeah.
It's the Breathe Life Show.
You gotta turn it on.
When Breathe Life Show.
You gotta turn it on.
It's the Breathe Life Show.
You gotta turn it on. The Breathe Life. You gotta turn it on.
It's the Breathe Life Show.
You gotta turn it on.
When Breathe Life Show.
You gotta turn it on.
It's the Breathe Life Show.
You gotta turn it on. The Breathe Life. You gotta Turner on.
Tune in Wednesday and Thursday nights, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, for Real Talk about real life. Inhale and breathe light. It's the Breathe Life Radio Show on blogtalkradio.com/BRILIFE.
It's the Breathe Life Show.
Breathe Life Radio is a grassroots radio show offering a voice to everyday people. It is without a doubt that this service is a pleasure for we at Breathe Life to provide. However, this service comes at a cost. For us to continue to provide this valuable outlet to the community, we need your support. Join us as we raise funds to keep Breathe Life Radio streaming while we provide assistance to Public School 161 in Brooklyn, New York. 15% of all funds raised will go towards providing school supplies to the students of this necessary and vital educational institution. You can find more information about our fundraiser on the web at brilife.evenbright.com. That's brilife.evenbright.com. Breathe Light. Welcome back to the Breathe Life.
Woosa. Welcome back to the Breathe Life Radio Show, where tonight we are discussing the Willie Lynch Letters Part 2, Hackley versus Wade. Gentlemen, tap those gloves and come back out thinking, not singing.
Well, you know what? This is what I want to say. Number one, I know this. Whether we can use a Willie Lynch papers, and again, I want everybody that's listening to understand. I have not read Dr. Hackley's book, so there might be those out there who have read Dr. Hackley's book who is hearing me and they're saying, "Well, you didn't read Dr. Hackley's book." I am referring to the Willie Lynch paper that's on the number one that you can find on the web. Number one. Number two, whether it is authenticated or not, because it was not talked about really prior to that, my only question would be this. There are men and women of color who have fought the good fight, who understood that this was a justice issue, not a just us issue, that they understood that justice for all, men like Dr. Martin Luther King, for instance, who understood the concept of justice for all, and it was needed. Dr. Martin Luther King, who was one of my heroes, he did not dismiss color. But what he did do was he lauded the fact that we have to make a move beyond that, and that, like my brother Hackley did say, and I agree 100%, that white people or anybody that's quote-unquote oppressor needs to understand that they have a ill effect from their behaviors, just like the people that they are acting against or upon. The bottom line is that if injustice is meted or dealt at me, and we're under the same umbrella of a country, that means that it's only a matter of time, as Malcolm X would say, is the chickens are going to come home the roost, meaning everybody is going to have to deal with the fact that there is a level of injustice. Well, my point is this. If there's a level of success that any of us have experienced, especially those who have experienced them in light of the fact that they didn't read the Willie Lynch papers or letters, suggest to me that they found their way or they knew something that they could lean on, that could move them beyond their circumstances, that they didn't have to be a captive of whatever circumstance they are. Now, I understand about scholarship and history, but all I'm saying is this, and again, because when I listen to Dr. Hackley talk, I see a lot that there's no doubt we agree on a lot. We agree on a lot. I just was thinking about the fact that sometimes it's kind of like, and I'm going to use this as an example. Steve Harvey has a book I call Think Like a Man. Now, obviously, that was a very played off in a very energetic look. People like a man, blah, blah, blah. But the reality is when you move away from it, the whole goal was to get people to look at the dynamics of relationships. My point is that a lot of times for theatrical purposes, for purposes of embellishment, and purposes to try to draw an audience, we may play off of certain titles. Because when you throw Willie Lynch out there, that is inflammatory, and that does get people's attention. But my point is that I particularly don't need that vehicle to bring brothers and sisters to a place of understanding their power and the fact that they are jewels that they can rise beyond a situation. I guess my issue was not about Dr. Hapley explaining anything about bringing us to another place, but it was the whole need for the what I call inflammatory. Because like I said, Will He Lynch. That's kind of coincidental that was the name of the papers, Willie Lynch. And I'll give the floor to Dr. Hapley.
Okay, you Will He Lynch. That's nice. I have another. I have an acronym for Lynch, and that is L long, Y yielding, N nullification, C containment, H habitation. Long yielding, nullification, and containment habitation. Lynching is not about the inflammatory. Well, this letter that you say is inflammatory. In my opinion, we need some flames. We need some inflammation because we're too comfortable with what is going on to, through, and around us. The scripture says, Isaiah 60, arise and shine, for thy light is come, and the glory of the Lord is risen upon thee. Gross darkness shall cover the earth, and darkness the people, but the Lord shall arise upon thee. He makes it very specific that you have to rise and you have to shine. You can't wait for a light to come to you because you got to understand the light that's coming through you. What does that deal with? That deals with the specifications of where you are. You're rising up from where you are. And to me, whether we deal with the experiences of Frederick Douglass, or we deal with the experiences of Trayvon Martin, or we talk about Dr. Martin Luther King, who I talk about a lot in my book, or we talk about Brother X, or we talk about Malcolm X, or we talk about many of the leaders that have gone on sacrifice, those leaders who are even here today. When we talk about these things, we cannot deny the idea that there has been a long yielding nullification, containment, habitation going on. We've been in this country, and while being in this country, we have been subjugated of some of our best minds and some of our best resources and ingenuity. We did not get our 40 acres and a mule. There are so many different dimensions of injustice that have happened on the in the creditor level, the financial level, just in the political level over these years, that now there needs to be, there very much needs to be a flame in the people. What is the flame that needs to be in the people? The flame in the people needs to say, first of all, it may be an ugly truth, but it is the truth. It is the truth. We have been dealing with psychological programming. We have been dealing with a disenfranchisement in so many different levels. It is easier for someone from another culture or country to come over from this from into this country and get credit and start businesses and buy property and things of that nature. These are the realities that we're dealing with. We cannot deny that reality. And in addition to that, I believe that anything or anybody that has something to say concerning the Lynch letter, concerning the experience, concerning Spike Lee's movies versus Tyler Perry's movies or whatever, everybody has something to add, or everybody has a concept to add, because everybody has a dimension of experience. But the one thing that we all must agree to is that the reality that we are facing every day is something that comes from an injustice and an oppression that is here, and that is, and quite frankly, it's it's not going away. We may be coming out in certain areas, but Malcolm X talked about something else. He talked about tokenism. There are things that the public are given, and people that are esteemed to high levels, and people that are allowed into levels to give a token. Of course, the ratio of how we weigh in politically and how we weigh in economically is, of course, still imbalanced. But the reality of the situation is that they've given tokens to us in the past to keep us quiet, to keep us thinking that we're progressing, all that kind of stuff. But the reality of it is that we are still not equally represented as we could be if we were brought into the reality of the truth that we have experienced. If we don't face the truth, we're gonna be in trouble.
So here we go. And my thing is that, yeah, I got all of that. It's beautiful. But the bottom line is this. So if show me the way. I'm sitting up here. Show me the way. I'm not asking you.
I'm gonna show you the way.
Floodgates and let the callers in. So there's two callers in particular that want to talk to the both of you, and they are friends to the Bree Life Radio Show. I'm talking about Alex, our brother Alex, and our brother QB. So I'm going to bring them both on the line. I'm going to ask Alex to ask his question first and direct it to whoever he wants to ask, because we're going over tonight, because we're going to get through this. I'm going to bring Alex and QB on the line. Alex will ask his question first to whoever he wants to direct it to. They'll answer the question, and then we'll direct it to QB, and he'll do the same. But before we bring them on the line, I want you to wrap this point up in the next minute, and then we're going to bring the both of them on the line.
Who? You mean me? Hello?
Yes, Mark.
Yeah. Okay, me. Okay, I didn't know. I was hearing Doc say, and I don't know if I can, I'm not going to even approach it, because he was telling me, he was making a statement that was telling me about making certain assumptions about how I was, first of all, trivializing what he was saying and what I was thinking. And I was saying, I was kind of, interested in that, but I'm going to let it pass and let the callers ask whatever they want to ask, and I'll leave it at that.
Dr. Hackley, before I bring the callers on, is there anything you'd like to say?
Yes. In this conversation, the concept that is the basis for the conversation is the Lynch letter, so I would say that it must have some validity, because it has stimulated a conversation actually that causes us to talk about empowerment and causes us to talk about the issues that are facing our community. So it has to have some validity. It must have some validity.
Okay. So having said that, we're bringing on Alex and QB. Good evening.
Hey.
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 Okay. So So, Alex, you'll start. Please direct your question to either one of the panelists, and they'll have a minute or two to answer the question.
Okay. Well, I have a comment and then a question. And then what I'm going to do is, after I ask my question, I'm going to hang up and then continue to listen to the show as it continues. What I want to say is, whether the Lynch letter is inflammatory, whether it is a fake, whether Farrakhan thought it up or did it right before the Million Man March, whatever, what we need to understand is that our behavior is indicative of what that letter outlines. Why is that? I don't really know. But let me say this. There's been a system in place for generations that have, for whatever reason, decided to subjugate black people. And the system is still in place. Now, I have a lot of white friends. They know I'm not racist. And they say to me all the time, they say, Alex, I'm not to blame for what my ancestry did. I wasn't around for that. And I tell them, you're right. But you are directly the beneficiary of all that slaughter, murder, rape, mayhem, thievery. You are the direct beneficiary of it. And if you can't see that, then I'm here to tell you that. Because here's the reason why I'm telling them that. Because Indians were given reparations because a wrong was admittedly committed. An apology was made. Jews were given reparations following their Holocaust because an apology was given, and they were given reparations. These groups and others like them have managed to prosper and build their economic base into the fortunes. Okay? But black people, despite our Holocaust, have not prospered economically, okay? Because the system in place, for some reason, decided to wage a war against the darker people of the world, and they haven't let go of it yet. And I'm going to tell you how they haven't let go of it yet. I'm going to give you some real recent history. There's a black hockey player. His name is Joel Ward. 11 days ago, he hit the winning goal in the last second of a championship hockey game. This is a black guy in a hockey game. Picture that. Okay? He hits the winning goal. They win the playoff series. They eliminate the Boston Bruins. This is the Washington Capitals. They eliminate the Boston Bruins on this man's goal. And the next day, Twitter is off the chain with racist comments, rhetoric about this man's an N-word. He's an F-word, the gay slur. He's this. He all up and down Twitter. Okay? The same thing happened when the movie The Hunger Games was released, and the producers of the film decided to put a young black girl in the protagonist position because white people felt, because she was described as a fair-skinned girl in the book, they decided she was white. But when the producers of the film said, we're going to put a black girl in this role, she died in the book, so she had to die in the movie, white people went up and down Twitter again. Because the N-word B died, I'm not as sad. Now I know it was the N-word that was in that role. I think it was good for her. This what goes on even today. Okay? And I'm going to close by saying this. Because I'm not going to stay on the lines. I could be here all night. Okay? I'm going to ask Brother Mark. I'm going to give Mark an assignment. And the assignment is going to be, because he likes to research and do this, and he comes up with good stuff. I want you to research for me any white person in recent memory that has been a victim of police or legal brutality in the manner of which we have faced it. And I'm talking about being shot 41 times, reaching for your wallet. I'm talking about having a nice stick shoved up your ass. I'm talking about an old lady wielding a cane that they shot by the name of Eleanor Bumpers. okay? Why do they feel the need to constantly slaughter us even today? Because there's no repercussions for their actions. That stuff is coming from up top. Find me a story of a white person that was slaughtered by law enforcement and legal system in the fashion in which we've been slaughtered, and I will concede to tell you that those things don't exist today. I will tell you that those things don't exist today, and we're paranoid. I'll be prepared to
say
that.
Can I say something?
And I'm going to hang up.
Can I say something? Hello?
Hello?
So, Alex, let me say something real quick. Number one, there's justice equal to black folks and white folks have equal justice.
Really?
Guess what? I don't believe that. And I never said that. So, obviously, now and when I say obviously, I'm saying because I've experienced the unequal hand of how justice has been delivered and given. So I'm not a fool. So whereas I respect what the brother is saying, the need for me to go look to see about a nightstick being stuck up anybody's behind as why I don't need to do that. I understand that the playing field is not even. And I knew that before I read the Willie Lynch letter. And I understood that, I understand, first of all, because I am a learned person, I understand the concept of systems and psychological systems of control. And I did not have an aha moment when I read the Willie Lynch papers. That's all I'm saying to you or anybody else. I understand this. And I'm saying that we can move beyond it, and people have moved beyond, meaning made inroads to move beyond it before they read anything. So, as far as its validity, the only reason its validity is being questioned because it's being presented. If someone was presenting the concept that there is a system of control and that we have been subjected and subjugated to it and that we have been on the uneven end of it, I can understand that. But when you bring up some specific document, then that document does come into question. If you don't bring in a document, then no one talks about it. We'll talk about just the issues at hand. But you can't sit up and cry like, oh, wait a minute. No, you can't question the validity of the paper when you bring it up. If you want to talk about injustice, we can chronicle injustice every day. But when you bring up something, now it gets questioned. It don't get questioned until you bring the paper up. No paper, no question. Injustice, I don't know nobody that don't believe that. And you probably got white folks that, if they want to be honest, they know that this is not fair to the people of a darker skin around them. Now, they might not care because they think that they don't have any effect. But remember, and I think about Langston Hughes and whatever, and he talks about the fire next time. The reality is there's a cautionary tale. If there's any person that's breathing and inhaling and exhaling off the same level of oxygen that each other is, then I mean this environmental factor called injustice is just a matter of time that if it don't get corrected, it's going to be a problem. So there is a cautionary tale about being aware of how your brother, are you your brother's keeper? You are your brother. And that's my position. And I don't need a letter that I can't even authenticate to justify my position. That's all I was saying.
Okay. Hold it right there. Quentin?
Yes.
Okay. 90 seconds. Let's move on. Now, Quentin, you have a question, a statement, or both? And who and directed to whichever panelist you so choose. And
yeah,
thank you for.
Okay, I have a question for Mark. And kind of bold statement. My question is, in layman's terms, in a nutshell, what are you basically saying about the condition and betterment of African Americans today?
Okay, what I'm saying is this. I'm saying that the human condition right now, and I look at this country,
and how this country is eroding right before its eyes. I look at the debt that we're dealing with, and I look at the fact that, unfortunately, what usually happens a lot of times, if you study history and you study our cultures and societies, you'll see that, and even the Bible talks about that, the least of these are always the best barometer of the health of a country. So, if you want to find out how healthy this country is, look at the least of these. Number one. Number two, if you do not consider the least of these, then you're ignoring your overall health as a country. So, therefore, when we look at the level of unemployment, that's hidden. Of course, it's hitting us hard, but guess what? It's hitting everybody hard. When we look at the levels of debt, that's hitting us. It's hitting everybody hard. And now the gas prices is hitting us. It's hitting everybody. The point is that you cannot deal with the least of you differently than you deal with the best of you, if you want to. Meaning the dominant. And when I say least, I'm not talking about humanity, because reality is you ain't no better than me, brother, white person. What I'm saying, from a stature, status, classification standpoint, you are no better than the person that's at the bottom rung. So if you don't have a healthy bottom rung, then you're in trouble. And that's what I'm saying. I'm saying our condition is unbelievably, irrevocably connected to the greater society. It's no other way. And the greater society needs to understand their buy-in and their need to support and include the least of these. And I don't know if the Willie Lynch paper is going to help people. My only issue with the Willie Lynch, and I keep going back to the Willie Lynch letter, the Willie Lynch letter is only discussed here. If we were just having a conversation about race and justice and injustice, then that's a whole different conversation. That's why I don't want, because I know people may be listening and say, well, Mark, you're talking about the Willie, I'm talking about the Willie Lynch paper and its validity only because it was introduced into the conversation. No Willie Lynch paper, we ain't talking about it. We're talking about basic injustice. And when we talk about injustice, I'm going to say the greater society has a reason to look at what's happening to the least of them, because it will affect the rest of them.
Well, to me, it doesn't seem like they worried about if you considering the least of them African Americans or people of color, because I thought that people of color were the majority.
You know, okay, but Quentin, when you say this, here's the thing. When I'm talking about the fact that if we do inclusive color, fine. But I know good and well, when we were talking about the Willie Lynch letter, we're not talking about folks of different shades. We're talking about black people that have African descent. So, right now, we're looking at 12% of the population. We're not the super minority any longer. We're not the super minority anymore. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm saying is that we have to really start having some conversations about the fact that when I say the least of us, I'm talking about those who have the least power, meaning control in the system, have the least buy-in into the system, and have the least access into the system. That's what I'm talking about when I say the least of us.
Do you know why that least has, why that those people have the least? Do you know why they do?
Well, first, because we were not included in the system to have any buy-in. We were brought into the system to work for those who created the system. That was why.
Okay.
Because guess what? I guarantee you this. No one foresaw 2012. Because remember, even when we were growing up, folks thought about 1999. They thought we were going to have cars flying like the Jetsons. There are a few visionaries amongst us. So the majority of people, plantation owners included, they didn't foresee none of the stuff that we're seeing right now, per se. Now, the whole concept of enslavement, the reality is this, from the Romans to the Egyptians, to various other cultures, slavery has been known. And slavery is always about controlling. Because if I want certain results and I want certain benefits, in my mind anyway, I have to have certain types of systems. The problem is this. Any system of injustice or any insidious system eventually is toxic even for those who are administering it. There's no way around it.
All right. Well, that may be true. That may be true. But those other enslavements that you were speaking of, how many of them completely lost who they were? Even to this day, they still know they're Jews. We are the only race who has been completely changed from the language that me and you are speaking right now to, you know, to the clothes we wear, to the food we eat, to our thought process. And there's no way that anyone can tell me that the damage that was done, the multitude, to the greatness of the damage that was done from the beatings, from the rapes, from the hangings, anything.
Yeah.
Even if the system turns around, how are you going to even be? How are you going to be able to function even if it straightens out? Because you don't have mentality to do.
Well,
Go ahead.
What I will say is that Quinn is this. In equity, injustice, and I'm sure that first of all, we have to say this: the concept of slavery, and as far as the transatlantic slave trade and the subsequent habitation here in this country is concerned, it's no doubt about it, it has its uniqueness. But the ultimate goal has always been the same in any level of slavery or containment, and that is to strip people of what they have if they can. Now, the thing about it is we were brought so far away that it was a little easier to do it. But you got to remember, in order for this slave trade to take place, we had to go, we, and I say we, meaning we of black African heritage, had to agree. Now, we can, if we were duped, fine, you can say whatever you want to say about how we ended up here, but this is the thing I do know, that I'm not going to ever know who I am beyond where I am, per se, at this point, number one. Number two, as a spiritual person, and I guess I have transcended that. I have accepted the fact that I have had injustices. But I do believe in the whole concept. I use Christianity as a link. The whole concept of being born again and transcending my condition is based 100% upon my spiritual lineage now, not my cultural lineage. So while I understand what it is, this land ain't the land for me anyway, and I aspire to other places. So now I can let my light shine the way I believe I can let it shine, and I can impact those around me as much as I can. And when I see injustice, I speak against injustice, because that's what I got to do. And I want to take another phrase, Rome wasn't created in a night. And you got to remember, out of all the societies in the world, we're probably the youngest. America as we know it, I ain't talking about our indigenous people, the indigenous tribal people of this land. I'm talking about the land that the pilgrims and the various other people from Europe came over here. This land is a baby land. And I still think about this. A 30-something-year-old person would not be considered as a very old person, but that's how long the Civil Rights Bill has existed. So as legislation towards trying to even bring equality is a baby legislation, is young. So we got to let it go, no doubt about it. But I got hope. That's all I got to say. I got hope.
You have hope that we prevail?
Well, I don't look at it as prevailing, because here's the thing. The reality is, prevailing, what do you mean prevailing?
No, I'm asking
I have hope that society at large, it's kind of like when it says about the whole pronouncement of the land being healed, so to speak. You know, it's like if they understand, if the majority of people start understanding, however they possibly can understand, that this is not beneficial to you, awesome, in the long run. Because remember, everybody has a short sight. You may start out thinking something is good for you, but it's never good to oppress any damn body. So when you do that,
okay,
you're
on
wrong.
That point. I wanna ask Dr. Hackley to jump in, because I wanna get his feeling, and I want Quentin to be able to ask Dr. Hackley a question also, but I want to get his feeling about what he's heard discussed from the time that Alex got on the phone to right now. What is your feeling in short, Dr. Hackley, about everything that you've heard? And is there any points that you want to specifically speak on?
Well, first of all, I want to say that I give honor to Brother Alex and Brother Quentin for coming on tonight and including themselves in the conversation because they didn't have to do that. But I do say this. Brother Alex brought up a very key point, which is show me someone of the Caucasian reality that suffers the injustice that the African American does at the level or to the degree or the dimension that we experience it, and we'll throw in the towel. That's one thing. The next thing that was said that was very key, and Brother Quinn made a very clear point when he asked the question, what overall are you saying when it concerns the empowerment or addressing the state of the African American in this country? What's your solution? And this is where my feeling is. If you have a problem with the content of the Willie Lynch letter, wouldn't it be perpetuating enslavement to deal with the content of the letter or deal against your brother in the content of the letter by saying that I have another solution that is not necessary to listen to, that's not necessary to engage, that's not necessary to bring up or to bring out. If it's working, if something is working for a part of the population and it may not be working or addressed for the rest, why make it another problem? Why fight the fight of bringing down someone else who's addressing the letter or addressing any kind of perspective? You could deal with people who have erroneous concepts of Obama. You can spend your energy dealing with situations or concepts of that nature. Why come against this particular letter? And I'm gonna say why. This is why I believe. I believe that the reason why people come against this letter or come against this collaboration of thoughts or whatever they want to call it, I believe that the important part, the most important part, is what Brother Quentin said. We are the only people alive today that have completely lost, first of all, our language. We don't know. At this generation, we can't trace it back. You have Bonnie Ray, who's on the television show that traces the lineage back, and she traces her ancestors all the way back to Europe and to Ireland and all this other kind of stuff, and she traces them all the way back to who her great-great-great-great-great grandfather was and what papers were passed down from this place to this place and who was an indentured servant and then who brought their way out and who brought this corporation all the way to where she is. The point stands that this generation of Caucasian Americans or European Americans are direct beneficiaries, as my brother said, to the injustice that has been placed upon our culture and our people, and we are the only people that do not have a valid stake in the decisions that are made in this land in comparison to our presence in this land. We've always been present in the work. We've always been present in the issues. We've always been present in the ingenuity. We've always been present in the inventions. We've always been present in the innovation. The only thing that we have not been present in is collecting checks and having our name put on the history books. That's right, no paper, no question. That's right, you said it right, no paper, no question. And that's the tactic that has been used for many years. If there's no paper on us being involved in making history, and so we don't even ask any questions. Our children don't even know to ask questions about certain dimensions of their history because nobody has told them that an injustice has been worked upon them.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I was a child that asked questions. And, you know, the funny thing about that is that, I don't know, you ask questions, Doc. There are other people like us. So our children, we were someone's children, and some children amongst us didn't ask. Some children amongst us are asking. And all I'm saying is this. Ain't nobody disagreeing with slavery. We, as far as our language, when you say our language, we can't even deal with that in a real scholarly way unless we look at the fact that the slaves came from all kind of places, even across some parts of East Africa. So there were, if you don't understand tribal languages, languages weren't the same. So when you say what was our language, the question is, depends on what part of Africa or what part of that area we came from anyway. So
agreed.
I don't know about that. I don't know about this. So
but
the point is, we were part.
It's about what was done. It's not about.
No, but what was but Clinton, what was done happened at the hands of somebody that looked just like you and just like me. We participated full and
if you want to say we were duped, wait a minute.
If you want to say we were duped, I'll even go along with that. But the bottom line is that we were part conspirators. That's all I'm saying. We were part.
But it doesn't matter.
This is the only comment that I'm making tonight, and it is quite simple. I don't understand why Mark has the perspective that he does, but I have to respect it because that's his perspective. But here's the thing, and I've said it to everyone on the line, except for Mark, because I haven't had a chance to kind of expand on this because I wanted to save it for the conversation tonight. But the one thing, you know, who knows who wrote, if there was such a document written, such as the Willie Lynch papers, who knows the validity of it, if it ever existed? Who actually drafted it, and who published it and put it as a format for potential slave owners to create a slave. We don't know if that was actually the formula, but one thing is undeniably true, and that is slavery existed. And so what, people who might have looked like us might have been co-conspirators. Here's the one thing that I would imagine that even a co-conspirator would never have thought, and that is that the people that they might have been trading off for whatever reason, maybe even to survive their own selves, they would have never thought that their people were going to be shackled and stacked on top of each other in a vessel to travel half a year across the ocean, that would be shackled together, raped. 50. You know, I told Dr. Hackley earlier that it's so odd that since we've been having this conversation, I have watched Amistad three times. I watched Amistad maybe one time the first time the movie came out. But in the last 3 weeks, I've watched it through on three separate occasions. And each occasion, my eyes are full. Because there was this one scene where the slaves were on the ship, vomiting, crying, it's raining. They're eating, they're slapping each other in the face because the cooks come down in the bowels of the vessel and they're scooping whatever kind of mush that they made in the hands of these slaves, and they're eating them like they're eating the mush like savages, and they're trying to steal the mush out of each other's hand. While up on the deck, the sailors are having an orgy, sex with hundreds of women on the deck of the ship, and then when they realized that they were running out of provisions, they shackled and chained 50 slaves to one another and connected the last shackle to an anchor and threw the anchor overboard, and there went 50 people. That is the most inhumane movie that I have ever watched. Next to, now, when I was a kid, I think when I was 9 years old, Roots came out, and that was devastating. I couldn't rest well weeks after seeing that, and then I was angered. I think I became an activist after Roots came out. That was my first eye-opening experience to the injustice of slavery. Then when I got older and I saw that movie, The Passion of Christ, watching the Romans tear the skin off of Jesus, that was like I was crying about that. But this Amistad movie, this is really hitting home for me. And we can debate the validity of the Willie Lynch letter for years, but one thing that nobody can deny is that slavery actually took place. And the mental impact, the emotional impact of slavery on those people, that was the first day post-traumatic stress disorder that our people actually encountered. And they passed that on from generation to generation. So that's my only feeling about it. I'm sorry. Go on.
I just want to say that I think Brother Mark understands all of that. But the one thing I'm questioning is the fact that we need, it doesn't matter if we were co-conspirators or not, it's the condition that we're in that needs to be corrected. That's the problem. It needs to be corrected, because the point that we're trying to make is all of those things that occurred has a psychological effect on us. And I don't have time to wait for the other people that caused it to get to believe that, oh, okay, you do need some help. I don't have time to wait for them. I don't have time to wait for time. The time is now.
And I don't have time to wait for that 40 acres and a mule either.
And I don't have time to wait for something. I don't have, wait, let me say this, brother. I don't have time to wait. Let me just say this. I don't have time to wait for somebody to give it to me either. And that's one of my
problems. I'm not disagreeing with you, QB. Here's the thing. Let me say this real quick. First of all, psychology is not new to me. I started my coursework and getting my master's in psychology. I've worked in the area of about psychology. I understand psychological effects. I might disagree with that. And I want to say something to what Dr. Hackley said. Number one, the reason I haven't taken time to go out and try to attack the Willie Lynch letter, and this has been my lifelong pilgrimage. It came to my attention about having a discussion about it because it was discussed on the show that I happen to be on. If I had not been on this place, we can call it Providence, Manifest Destiny, or whatever the case may be, but I wasn't in this place when they had a conversation about the Willie Lynch letter. Whenever anything is presented in an authoritative standpoint, I'm the person that questions authority. I don't want to know where the hell it's coming from. That's all it had to be. It really wasn't about anything other than that. But now that we've expanded this into much more than what it is, this is what I will say. When you're ready to go and do whatever you need to do to get beyond, I explain to you all what I do with the young people that I work with to try to work beyond their circumstances. I don't know what QB is suggesting about the psychological programming. What do you want to do for therapy? Because I understand therapy models. So now we know that we have, as Bree said, we have PTSD. If you look at PTSD, the best way to treat PTSD is to let people know that whatever the thing that was causing a problem is not existing anymore.
So you bring people into a reality state to get rid of PTSD. Okay? That's a fact, a psychological fact. And you can
well,
even
yeah,
use
PTSD.
You can use cognitive.
It doesn't exist. Either you have it or you don't.
No. Wait.
I keep hearing that it doesn't exist anymore, and we did it to ourselves. But I am challenged. This is what my challenge is. When our brother, Trayvon Martin, was laid down just a few weeks ago because he had on a hoodie and he was reaching in his pocket, and that was done by a man who was not black.
White.
We didn't do it to ourselves.
And he wasn't white, but go ahead.
If that's something that we did to ourselves, I need to understand why.
No. But the issue, wait a minute, brother, that was the problem we're having, we're not talking about in that situation. I don't even want to get into that.
We have to get into that because that's what we're dealing with today.
If we get to that, this is not about Zimmerman as much as it is about the law.
Today we are dealing with racism. Today we are dealing with racial profiling.
Zimmerman is not a white man. And if a black man had a shot,
Zimmerman may not be white, but Trayvon was black.
So if a black man shoots Trayvon, then we're talking about what?
We're dealing with an individual
that has self hatred because if he would kill his brother, he doesn't love himself.
But let's go back to Zimmerman. Forget we ain't talking about the black person. What I'm saying is this: we're not dealing with the fact that laws are broken in this country every day. What we want is justice, meaning when a law is broken, we want justice under the law. That's what we say.
A law was broken when we were brought over here. A law was broken. The law was broken when we were hung from a tree, and then they changed the law to make it legal.
The natural law of enslavement, which has been going on for eons, was broken whenever a man devalued the life of another man, another human.
Okay.
So we don't have to wait to listen. We don't have to wait to cross the water. The devaluing of a human condition happened prior to crossing the water.
We're not talking about just a human being. We're talking about a black boy.
Just a human being. It's not just a human boy. Let me ask you a question.
I'm asking you a question. Are you simplifying the specifics of his identity as an experienced in this country?
No, I am not. What I am saying to you is this. Humanity as a whole is important. I am not devaluing him. And as a matter of fact, what I am doing is because I am saying that, I'm saying that he should not have any different treatment. He should have the same treatment of value. He should have the same treatment of reverence. That's what I am saying.
Okay,
he wasn't getting the same treatment because he went three months. Walking around.
So now you're going to recite and regurgitate what happened. We know. All I'm saying to you is this.
But they're already showing that they're not operating from a plateau of law, therefore not caring about justice. Because they allowed this man to walk around for three months. If that was you, me, Quentin or Dr. Hackley, our asses would have been locked up already.
Well, wait a minute. Can we all agree? We can all raise our hands. do black people get treated unfairly under this system of justice? Everybody going to say amen.
All day.
We're not disagreeing. We're not disagreeing with that. Mark did not say that. So before y'all get get your spears out of whatever you're throwing in the dark, Mark ain't going to agree with y'all.
They go civilizing again. Wait a minute. What are you saying?
See, I know you're going to say that, but that's why I said that. Anyway, go ahead.
Okay.
What I'm saying is this: injustice has to be dealt with. No doubt about it. That's what we have to do. We have to focus on why we have a law. That when we read the law in general, there are pieces of the law when it comes. When we say injustice for all, then we have to address the fact that we're not getting justice. We haven't been getting justice. And that we demand justice. But one of the best ways to convince me, meaning someone else on the outside that needs to understand, if I was a salesman, and I have been a salesman, one thing I tell the people is this: why something I'm selling has a benefit to them. Why it's a good thing for them to get. So therefore, when I talk to my white colleagues, just like you talk to your white colleagues, and I heard Alex talk to his white friends, I explain to them why it is very beneficial for them to look at addressing injustice. Now, whether they hear me, whether it falls on a deaf ear, I ain't gonna worry about that, because I'm gonna speak the truth in love. And I'm gonna let it do what it do. And I'm gonna keep speaking the truth in love, and I'll let it do what it do. But the reality is this: I tell a white brother in a minute, you owe it to yourself to treat me fairly. You owe it to yourself, and I can show you why. Because ultimately, I'm breathing off the same air, I'm speaking off the same water, I'm sharing the same space. And if I don't get justice, it's just a matter of time before you're gonna experience the same injustice that you're giving out. And that's what
me and my family has endured being Egyptian, living in racist Crown Heights in the 70s. My parents' mail torn up because we had an American Jewish mailman, number one, being 7 years old, having a Jewish elementary school teacher slam my head up against the wall. Looking in corporate America, being called a black bitch because I made $140,000 as a consultant versus the FTEs, the Caucasian FTEs that I was managing, making an average of anywhere from $47,000 to $65,000 a year. All the injustices that I had being beat up by my fiance, both of us being people of color in a white courtroom, and he's already been convicted. He's already been convicted of domestic battery, but he can accuse me of taking a refrigerator, a TV, a dishwasher, and a washing machine out of a house that we cohabitated in 4 years. And I walk away with a conviction. How just is this world,
me and my son
that I'm raising? How just is it?
You can enumerate the things that are not right, and I got that. But my question only is, okay, so fine. I agree with you. Because trust me, everybody on this panel here can sit up and talk about some injustices that they have either been part and parcel of or have seen.
It seems to a lot of people out there, Mark, and this is what everybody's trying to help you understand. You seem partial to this whole issue of race. It almost makes it sound like you don't even believe you're black. Like you don't even understand the black condition.
I don't believe that's what it is.
This is what it sounds like. That's why That's why it sounds so, that's why we, you know, myself, maybe Alex, Quentin, and Dr. Hackley, it's like, what is it about race that you, it's like you want us all to sing Kumbaya, and we don't feel like that.
No, I just want to ask you a question, Brother Mark. Did you not make the statement that you would tell your white counterparts or whatever that you owe it to me, and within time, you're going to experience this yourself, but we
I didn't say that, Quentin. I said they owe it to themselves. They owe it to themselves to treat me right. They owe it to themselves.
Okay, but you know what? You can say that all day, but that's not going to make them.
Okay, wait a minute. So what are we going to do? We busting their ass? What are we going to do? That's all I want to know. We're going to have
to. No, I didn't say that either. How does that going to bust in the head?
But I'm asking, what are we going
to do? But I tell you what's owed. We owe it to ourselves to correct the situation.
I agree.
I ain't got time to wait for him.
Oh, my God. That's what I've been saying.
I want to interject something, and this is a very interesting, and Brother Mark, I want you to look this up. This is a very interesting verse of scripture. It stopped me, and it made me read it again a different time. It is Matthew chapter 10, verse 5.
Wow, right next to me. Go ahead. I was in Matthew 7 a few minutes ago, so go to 10. I'm here.
Now, this is what it says. These 12 Jesus sent forth and commanded them, saying, now just this one verse alone. He says, go not into the way of the Gentiles, and into any city of the Samaritan enter ye not. But verse 6 says this, but go rather to the lost sheep of your own house. Jesus intentionally sent his disciples toward their own culture for the redemption of their culture. In his initial sending of the 12, for us to be on the phone and say that we're going to deal with the injustices from a perspective of humanity is also for us to err in the scripture. Because Jesus sent his own disciples. Jesus sent his own disciples. This is Bible.
Yeah.
Jesus, his own disciples.
This is fire. See, one thing I always look at things, I always look at the whole story of where we were going before we got to Acts. Right before we got to Acts. Before we got to the resurrection. It's a nice story of what he's outlined, because he was talking to Jews. He was talking to Jews.
We can't get to Acts without going through Matthew, brother. You can't throw out Matthew.
But we are a product. But wait a minute, brother. But wait a minute. To be honest,
you can't throw out Matthew.
I'm not trying to, but I understand it's a journey. And that journey brings me to where I am. And we don't do it from a historical context, because in a historical and spiritual context, we should have the ability to reap the benefits of the resurrection.
Now if that principle is true, if that principle stands true, then right now, today, Brother Mark, then you can write, now watch this, you can write a dimension to the testament of Jesus Christ in your own life, and I don't have to rely on Paul's writing. I can go to Brother Mark's writing, and I can give me a current idea of what Jesus is doing today.
Because I
don't need to look at the past. I just need to look at today. That's basically what you're saying.
I'm supposed to be, if I believe this and walk in this, I'm a living letter, so I don't have to go to Paul. I can't go to Dr. Hackley. Dr. Hackley is a walking epistle. He is a walking life.
You got that right. But the question is the living epistle in alignment with the historical value of the written epistle?
Well, let me tell you something, my brother. What I will tell you is this. There's no doubt about it. If I'm letting my life shine, if I'm walking in the light, if I'm living a life that is based upon the death and the resurrection, you know what I'm saying, and the promises of the death and the resurrection, then how can I not be a good example of alignment with what was written?
Let me tell you what I personally believe about the one of the promises of the resurrection. As somebody who trains people to go and serve the people and raises ministers and ordains ministers, I tell them, don't try to go out the country. Don't go all over the nation. Don't go all over the world, all over the globe, looking to solve the human condition before you go down the street, around the corner. Don't walk over the brother that's in front of you. Don't walk past the dysfunction that's going on in your own church, in your own house, to go and solve the dysfunction that's going on.
Brother Mark,
if you think you're walking in that particular light you're talking about, I got an area in Chicago for you to walk down, and they put that light out because you don't have that.
You know what? I'm gonna tell you something. You know what? First of all, yeah, do I walk through the valley of the shadow of death? I fear no evil because thou art with me. I ain't worried about that street because I done been down those streets. I done been down the ugliest streets in the city. I ain't even really worried about that. I'm not worried about that, bro. Because guess what?
You may not be worried about it, but I'm just telling you. You don't have to be worried in order for something to occur.
I don't have to be worried. You ain't got to be worried about it for an airplane to fly over your damn house right now and the engine to fall down and destroy your whole building. That's not my point. Whatever's going to come to me,
but I'm not the one claiming that I could catch that airplane and get up and stop it. I'm not claiming
Brother Quentin, all I'm saying is this. And I'm going to say this to you, and I say this to Brother Hackley, because Brother Hackley is 100% correct. To me, it's not where all these other places, it is where you at. So therefore, I'm not trying to go nowhere. I got too many people that need to see what they need to see right in my little circle. So I ain't got to go across the country nowhere to do that. I agree with you. You got to work on your house. You're so right. But that's why I teach my children. My three children, I teach them to say, look, trust me, I ain't tripping. Number one. Number two, I used to teach, I don't tell you this, Brother Quentin, because I got dear friends that some of the ugliest gangbangers. I got some friends right now doing life in prison for murder when they was out there on the streets banging. I was around them. The problem was, I understand the wretchedness of a condition of a people that who don't have a self-value. I got that. So I preach to that.
Okay.
I work in a homeless shelter. Look, I work in a homeless shelter, dig this, with young brothers who are from point, I'm talking about 18 to 21, suicidal, schizophrenic, manic depressed. And we're talking about, I'm sitting there having a conversation with folks that I had to talk down a young man that had a machete that was ready to cut up some people. The police officers were all around, they standing out there looking, they got their hands on their holsters, and I'm trying to explain to them, brother, let me work with them. And they basically said, you better hurry up and work with this, because this boy got a weapon.
Okay, so now let me ask you, what did you do to talk that brother down? What did you use?
Basically, you know what? I basically told him, well, I said, brother, it ain't worth it, and you're worth more than what you're about to do. Now, guess what? It wasn't really about what I said, because one thing Brother Hackley can tell you is this, when the spirit is operating in a place, it can take over a place. So it's well beyond whatever I said, because I didn't have any control in that situation. And but from the grace of God, that it could have happened a whole different way. So I don't take no responsibility for nothing. It's kind of like when a brother goes into a situation and says, God, give me the words to say, because I don't know exactly what to say. I don't know what to say. But I know something needs to be said, and I'm here for a reason. So therefore, I believe that I was not placed here by mistake, so something right was going to happen. That was my faith and my belief, and it worked out. You know what I'm saying? I can't be every place and every time, but I don't worry about that. I worry about where I am. So I agree with Dr. Hackley. So before all of you all get too untwisted and unwind about my unbelief about injustice, I believe in injustice. I believe in vindication, and I understand injustice. I understand you, brothers. I'm not in some kind of highfalutin white neighborhood where black folks don't exist. That black folks and Hispanic and other people that got some messed up situations are trying to navigate.
And let me say this to you, Brother Wade. I want you to understand something about my perspective. Now, I wrote a book. It's called, now this is it. This is the whole thing. I'm going to read it to you. And maybe, I don't know if it will change your thoughts or not. But this is the title. It's called The Letter. The subheading is Hackley's Exhaustive Commentary of the Willie Lynch Letter. The third line says Definitive Perspectives in the Modern African American Experience. Basically, I don't argue. Now this is the key. I'm not in that letter to argue the authorship of the letter, but I am in the letter to argue the similarities between the keep the body, take the mind concept, or beat the nigga in front of the infant and the female. Don't kill him, but put the fear of God in him. Because my brother's being exploited. You said yourself, you've been in that courtroom, and Bree's been in that courtroom, I've been in that courtroom. There's been so many people that have been before. Now, this is very interesting. Before a white judge or before a judge of another nationality trying to identify a solution for their cultural dysfunction, or how do we solve the breakup of this family, or how do we solve the breakdown of this relationship, or how do we keep it civil, or how do we keep it from being illegal? So it's very challenging to me that we have a astronomical rate of trying to solve our cultural problems or our personal problems in a system that was never designed to offer us any solution.
I got to piggyback off of that. My case came after this case that went before that white judge. This man had broken his probation. And when you break probation, it is a violation, and you should go to jail.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what they told him? Because he was white?
Mm.
Or we're going to give you another chance. Now, when do you ever hear that going on the average?
Okay.
With a white judge sentencing a black person. He violated his probation twice. And he said, we're going to give you one more chance. Then I came behind him, never been in any kind of trouble. And they tried to nail my ass to the cross.
Okay. So Brittany and Brother Hackley, and I'm going to say this because for me, and I know it is getting late for y'all, and I gotta be at the airport at 6 o'clock in the morning. I got 30 minutes to get there from where I live. I will say this. So I need to be getting to bed. But what I will say is this. Number one, there's never an argument from me about injustice. Number two, I do think about Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And I think that they would not disagree that they were in a furnace, no doubt about it. And I think that we're in the furnace of a situation. So what we got to find is we got to find some kind of peace and belief in two things, deliverance and what we need to do to get beyond our understand, similar to Shadrach, and Meshach, and Abednego, who believed while they were in that furnace. Who believed that they had the spirit of God and the spirit of protection and the spirit of providence on their side, that they were going to be able to move beyond that situation because of what they believed. So I have a dual citizenship, so I understand that. I'm not tripping, and I know about justice, and I know that we have to continue to march for that. But the bottom line is, and all I ever said was this, I mean, before y'all start thinking, y'all remind me right now, of people that's trying to save somebody that's lost.
No, baby. Not me.
I believe.
what we're trying to do?
Wait a minute. I said it reminds me. I didn't say you were trying to do that. Because what happens sometimes is when a person is not believing for whatever reason, people try to show them. You see what I'm saying? And there are four various methods to do that.
I think this is a way of trivializing what we're saying. I don't agree with that.
But brother, this is the second time during this whole conversation that you use the word trivialize. I'm not trying to trivialize anything.
That's because you're saying something that we're doing that we never said we're doing.
No, but you know what? This is the first thing.
The first time you said, before y'all get y'all spirits up and up, or before y'all get y'all, you keep making comments like that, and you keep saying things that try to summate what we say, because you know psychology, so you try to summate what we say, so you can bring our point down to a even medium, so that you can reinterject your point. But tonight, it doesn't work, because the reality is you have an idea, and we have an idea, and we disagree. Nobody's trying to save you. You got to save yourself according to that word. You got to save yourself from this untoward generation. We are simply having a dynamic of conversation that's introducing something that is different than what you think. And then you have to address where you are based on what you're hearing. Nobody's coming against you. We're actually trying to save somebody else, because somebody is listening to this situation tonight, and they're listening, and they might not even be strong as any of us on the line. But the truth is, they may very well agree with everything that's been said, and they may hear all the perspectives, but they just don't know how to put it apply it to their own life. They just don't know how to put one foot in front of the other. That's the person that really needs to be saved. So then
maybe we can go here, and it kind of reminds me of a quote that Mother Teresa had. She said, "I will never attend an anti-war rally. If you have a peace rally, invite me. Focus on what you want peace instead of what you don't want war." So here's the thing, and I'll say this. If we know what we want, and we have a process as to what we will need to do to get it, or what we believe we need to do to get it, then we need to break bread on those things. I did it for somewhat of a energetic discourse, and also to bring some energy to the Bree Life radio show. I agreed to do this because I had discussed something with Bree about some things that I heard that I didn't agree with. Don't want to spend a whole lot more time on it because, again, I applaud any brother that is trying to, I applaud any brother who understands that there's another condition to be in other than his present condition, and that's willing to move towards trying to bring other people to that same understanding. You know, as we say in the church, deliverance. Okay? I'm all for that. So when I leave, I'm going to leave in love and in peace, so to speak, because this has been very energetic and very good. I'm not mad at the Willie Lynch letter. I just think I thought it was a quite interesting thing as to where it came. I thought it was somewhat this is my thinking. It's somewhat inflammatory. I do understand slavery. I mean, understand it from the standpoint that I am a person who came from a lineage of slavery, number one. Number two, that I am a person who still experiences the injustices of the system, but I also have a dual citizenship, and I do mention that because I think that is very valuable as far as my ability to navigate this craziness and bring anybody else to an understanding that they too can move beyond it. And that's why
Brother Wade, I do want to say this. In my book, I talk about concepts of deliverance, and I talk about the different concepts of deliverance. And there is a concept of deliverance, yes, of mental freedom and mental deliverance from the things that bind you to cause you, because as a man thinketh, so is he. And so so we talk about mental deliverance, but then there's a whole another concept of deliverance that Moses had and other people had, which was bringing their entire group of people that had their same experience out of the oppression of the system, Pharaoh or whatever, whoever the oppressor was at the time, the concept was of deliverance was bringing everybody out, And the key is that we can't talk about just a personal deliverance. We've got to talk about deliverance in its sovereign form, If we talk about deliverance, it has to be deliverance, yes, in a personal form, but we also must be delivered sovereignly.
Yeah, and you're right, and my thing about the sovereign deliverance is this, that I believe we have a sovereign God, and we have a just God. And I believe that whatever, if we walk in that belief of his justice, and we, again, and I like the scripture, let your light so shine before men that they'll see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven. To me, we have to be a beacon. And the word, and here's the thing, I agree in education because the word intelligence comes from the same word that we use for life. So, the cool thing about intelligence, meaning having a higher quotient of understanding about the thing, that gives us a better chance of vibrating at a higher level of energy of life so other people can see their way out. Because
that's the very point that I think both Quentin, Dr. Hackley, and Alex are making. Not so much just about the Willie Lynch letter, but about the effect.
I'm making it too.
The effect of slavery. If we don't understand what the long-term effect of it has been, which has resulted in a lot of discord and behavior within our people, as a result of a systematic of social economic discord that's still oppressed on us, we're not going to be able to fix the problem. You got to know what the problem is. You got to know what the core problem is before you can, address the layers. And Dr. Hackley, but from what I've heard, I believe that's where you're coming from. I know for a fact because Quentin and I have had exhaustive conversations about this very topic, and it's a passion of his, that things that he wants to work towards fixing in our people in years to come. We have to recognize that a problem existed and that behaviors in us still exist as a result of this traumatic experience in our past, so that we can make today and tomorrow better for us and our children and our children's children.
Yes, absolutely. I agree.
100%. Okay. Well, wow. We went really over. and Mark is right. I think we all know where we're coming from, and I'm glad that we had this dialogue because we needed to get all this out, because there are so many things that we're going to be working on collectively. So sometimes you gotta have some kind of dialogue to find out who's sitting next to you and across from you. So having said that, I want to thank you both. I want to thank Quentin and Alex for coming on the show and asking the much-needed questions or making the statements to further the dialogue. I also want to thank our listeners. I know Turtle is still out there, and Super Duper is still out there, and all the other listeners. Peace and blessings, and closing out the show, I love you all on purpose. And tune in tomorrow to Bree Life Radio as we do what we do on Thursdays. We freestyle. So, good night, everybody. And thank you, thank you, thank you.
Good night.
All right. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.